Thank you very much. I'd like to call the meeting to order. We're going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm Patty Belloc. I'm co-chair of COGFA. Senator Schoenberg is supposed to be coming, so we're going to start the meeting. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Belloc.
Here.
Senator Frerichs. Representative McCarthy.
Here.
Senator Murphy. Representative Nekritz. Yes. Representative Poe. Representative Riley.
Here.
Senator Schmidt, Senator Schoenberg, Senator Severson, Senator Trotter, Representative Tryon.
Patty, recall Murphy.
Five present. Senator Matt Murphy, please add him to the roll.
Six present.
That's six COGFA members being present. The purpose of the meeting today is the State Facility Closure Act hearing on the Tinley Park Mental Health Center. Before we start, I'd like to thank all the people from Tinley Park for taking us on the tour of the facility. We appreciate that. And I want to thank all the state officials from all the governor's administration, Secretary Sadler, Director Jones, and the head of corrections for being at all the meetings with us. We appreciate all of your attention to the issues and all of your patience with all the drilling that everybody has given you. Thank you. So, Representative Nekritz, would you just like to give a couple of the rules?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It has been the custom of the commission as we go through these hearings to, once we're done with the agency testifying and the elected officials, to give everyone as fair a treatment as we can, so we will be limiting everyone to 2 minutes. And I assure you that you can make your point and help us remember your point by keeping it to 2 minutes. I will be timing, and I do have a 1 minute to go, so you can watch for that, and time's up. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nekritz. That rule has been very helpful because this is our seventh hearing, and a lot of the hearings have gone 5 to 5.5 hours. We have allowed everybody to participate and give testimony if they want to. So by implementing that rule, you are just respecting others so that they will get their time also. I would just like to announce the other elected officials here today who are with COGFA members, and they will be serving on the third panel. That's Representative Kevin McCarthy from the 37th District, Representative Marlo Colvin from the 33rd District, State Senator Maggie Crotty from the 19th District, County Executive from Will County, Larry Walsh, Paul Kroppas, Sheriff of Will County, Dr. Donald McKinney, Superintendent of the West Harvey Dixmoor School District number 47, Tony Dubois, Deputy Chief, City of Markham. Michael Woods, on behalf of James Glasgow, State's Attorney of Will County. Thank you. And Sandy Stravalopoulos, Assistant State's Attorney, Supervisor of Mental Health, Cook County State's Attorney's Office. Thank you all for joining us today. Oh, no. Representative Renee Kozel. Thank you. I think that's everybody. So let's go on to second number on the agenda is the State of Illinois Executive Branch Officials. Thank you. If you'll just please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon. My name is Sheila Sagan-Retta. I'm the General Counsel in the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, filling in for Director Vaught today, who unfortunately is traveling out of state. Can you hear me? A little closer? Okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. We're here today to discuss the announcement we have made to close Tinley Park Mental Health Center. We are faced with a budget that has severe shortages in human services appropriations. In announcing the closing of Tinley Park Mental Health Center, we are managing the budget. The decisions we have to make are difficult ones, They impact citizens throughout the state, especially those who use these facilities and their families. However, we have to work with the resources we have. It is no secret that the General Assembly underfunded the operational and personnel lines in a number of state agencies. In particular, Tinley Park's budget line was cut by 50% for the current fiscal year. That means there is not enough money to run Tinley Park for more than half a year. Governor Quinn proposed a budget to fully fund Tinley Park through the end of the fiscal year. That budget did not pass. We cannot spend money we do not have. It is our responsibility to manage and implement the budget before us. That budget does not provide the funding to keep Tinley Park Mental Health Center open for the entire fiscal year. In terms of the details, I'll now turn it over to Secretary Sadler.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Bellick, and members of the commission and guests behind us. Thank you yet again for allowing us to speak with you regarding the budget challenges that we're facing this year. To date, we have had 4 closure hearings. This is our 5th. 2 of them have been regarding mental health centers, and 2 regarding state-operated developmental centers, SODCs. So this is the 3rd mental health closure, and we had 2 in DD. In the case of the budget for DHS's 8 state-operated developmental centers, HB 3717 and the subsequently approved budget combined the operating budgets for all 8 SODCs and then cut the lump by 20%. In the case of our state-operated psychiatric hospitals, the approved FY12 budget similarly lumped the operating budgets of 7 of our state hospitals, 7 out of 9, lumped them and then cut the lump by 23%. Of the remaining 2 state-operated hospitals, one is the treatment and detention facility in Rushville, and the other is the Tinley Park Mental Health Center. The budget that was approved very noticeably and intentionally kept the Tinley Park Mental Health Center out of the mental health facilities lump, unlike the budget for any of the facilities that we've discussed so far. The budget for Tinley Park sent a clear and definite message that we must not continue the status quo at the Tinley Park Mental Health Center. The legislation provided $10.7 million for the Tinley Park Mental Health Center for the fiscal year, $10.7 million, as compared to the $21.4 million that was requested. In fiscal year 11, we expended $20.3 million, $20.3 million in fiscal year 11. The governor's introduced budget requested $21.4 million, and our appropriation was $10.7 million. Before we proceed to the presentation by Dr. Lori Jones, Director of the Division of Mental Health, I'd like to make a few comparisons, contrasts. In the case of the other proposed closures, we've discussed decisions regarding which facilities would need to close in order to try to best comply with the budget. With Tinley Park, the 50% appropriation sent a clear message that this facility is intended for closure. With other proposed hospital closures, we are engaging the community. We at DHS are engaging the community to locate and identify capacity for care of our patients. With Tinley Park, as you'll hear from Dr. Jones, we have indications from both the feds and the surrounding community that sufficient capacity does exist. The question here is funding. Whether we care for our patients in the hospital or whether we care for them in the community, funding is a concern. With other proposed closures, transportation of patients to the nearest state hospital is problematic. With Tinley Park, community capacity does in fact receive some backup or reinforcement by the relative proximity of Madden, which is 23 miles away from Tinley Park. And last, with other proposed closures, DHS is committed to the planning process, but with Tinley Park, we have a plan that is in place, that moves us forward, and that does not violate reasonable public policy. The strongest message that we have is that the General Assembly has, through the budget, directed us to close Tinley Park. We visited the facility today And the deferred maintenance is staggering. The facility is not up to state-of-the-art by any stretch of the imagination. There are 94 buildings on the campus. Only eight are currently occupied. DHS respects the role of this commission, and we also take the word and budget of the General Assembly very, very seriously. And we try very hard not to spend money that has not been appropriated. The $10.6 million that was appropriated for Tinley Park in FY12 is sufficient only to last until November 30th with lump sum payments that will be owed or would be owed to employees in the event of a closure. We have accrued vacation and sick time. If there weren't lump sum payments, the appropriation could last us through early December. State statute, one of the budget implementation bills that was passed previously, state statute requires that we give employees 30 days notice before a layoff. And through no disrespect to this commission, I need and respectfully wish to inform members of this commission that layoff notices will be issued to the approximately 184 staff members on the day after this hearing. Budget limitations and the logistics of human resources processing dictated that we should have issued the notice yesterday, and yet, of course, we did not dare do so because of this hearing. We have the ability to rescind these notices, and yet, without additional funding, it is clear that we must issue them right away. Closure of the Tinley Park Mental Health Center will impact the 184 staff members and the 35 patients who are being cared for today. With that, I'll pass the microphone over, the presentation over to Dr. Lori Rickman-Jones, Director of the Division of Developmental Disabilities.
Oops.
Oh, sorry. Director of the Division of Mental Health. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary Sadler, and good afternoon, Co-Chair Bellock and members of the Commission. I'm Dr. Lori Jones, Director of the Division of Mental Health, and I will give a brief presentation on the closure. The Department of Human Services announced a plan to close Tinley Park Mental Health Center on September 8, 2011. And as what has already been stated, the closure is the direct result of the lack of appropriation available to operate the hospital for the entire year. Also, as stated, the General Assembly appropriated $10.6 million for FY12, an insufficient amount to operate the hospital. And as Secretary Sadler just said, with lump sum payouts, we would propose a closure date of December 3rd, 2011. As you know, three hospitals were identified for closure this year: Singer, Tinley Park, and Chester. And without additional appropriation, we will not be able to operate any hospitals beyond April 2012. You may remember, for those of you who were on the commission several years ago, COGFA was notified on September 18, 2008 of DHS's intention to close Tinley Park Mental Health Center at that time and build a 100-bed replacement hospital for the Southland region. That plan was developed by a task force that was convened in 2004 and involved the new public-private partnership model. That public-private partnership model was allowing us to build a new hospital, amortizing the cost of the replacement facility, building that into the operational cost of the hospital of about $18 million at that time. Following the approval that we did get from COGFA for that plan, the administration changed in Washington and actually in Illinois, and the Affordable Care Act, health care reform, was passed by Congress in March 2010. With the Affordable Care Act and health care reform, in Illinois, it is estimated by 2014 approximately 600,000 uninsured individuals will have access to insurance. We believe that 85 to 90% of persons currently served by DMH will have insurance through Medicaid or the exchanges and will have access to care in the private sector, obviating the need for a replacement public hospital. The region, we believe, does have capacity in the private sector to accommodate the needs for inpatient psychiatric care or alternative services. For example, one of the alternative services that we're most seriously looking at is services for substance abuse individuals. 23.8% of the individuals admitted to Tinley Park at discharge have a substance abuse only diagnosis, which means that they should more appropriately be treated in the substance abuse system. So as we look at building community resources, we would look to building substance abuse residential treatment options for these individuals so that they can be appropriately served in that system and not inappropriately served in the mental health acute psychiatric bed system. CMS determined in March 2009, and I quote, "Our records indicate that there are an existing 1,186 Medicare-certified psychiatric beds in Cook County and Will County, and therefore there does not appear to be a lack of access to psychiatric services in these areas." This is validated by data from Illinois Department of Public Health, where we have in the region about 438 beds with a general occupancy rate of 57%. By continuing care in a state hospital IMD, wherein the state cannot garner Medicaid for this population, beginning in 2014, the state stands to lose conservatively somewhere between $6 and $10 million each year in revenue from FFP. A little bit about the Tinley Park Mental Health Center. It's constructed in 1953 on 213 acres, a vast campus. As Secretary Sadler said, there are 8 buildings that are operational now, only one for patient care, one for administration, and one for actually a kitchen and pharmacy. The rest are for garage storage, PowerPoint, things like that. It's co-located on the former Howe Developmental Center campus that closed in 2009. Has 75 budgeted beds, 2 patient care units. It was decertified by CMS in 2009, and CMS is not likely to recertify, put us way down on the priority list. It serves the far south side of Chicago, Southern Cook, Will, Grundy, and Kankakee counties. Operating budget for FY11 was $20.4 million. Current staffing 184. Admissions in FY11 was 1905. Average daily census was 68. Current census is about 38. Average occupancy rate, 90.5%. Uninsured population, 98%. What is the Tinley Park closure plan? The projected closure date is December 3rd, 2011. Proposed closure activities, including giving notice to labor, as Secretary Sadler said, and notifying other stakeholders. Again, this is due to our statutory obligation to give state employees 30 days notice. Phase out admissions by the second week in November, and continue to work with Healthcare Family Services, our sister agency, and system partners to enhance and develop the community system of care necessary to support these individuals. Our commitment remains to do everything possible to assure that services are available to individuals in need post-closure. To date, we've had over 15 group meetings and many more individual meetings with community stakeholders, including mental health providers, substance abuse providers, and hospitals. Many of them have given us proposals and verbal commitments to serve this population. We are revisiting earlier proposals by an expanded part of the region, including the Southland and Chicago, to expand crisis care and increase inpatient hospital beds globally. And specifics of the community expansion plan include: for inpatient care, we have 5 hospitals that have expressed an interest in committing existing capacity in service to the current Tinley Park population. More have expressed an interest pending the outcome of this process. We have 2 providers committed to do crisis beds, and 1 more who has expressed interest, and 3 substance abuse providers who have proposed opening substance abuse residential treatment beds. The DMH hospital operations deficit for FY12 was $58.7 million. Budget savings prior to the closure plan reduced the deficit to $42.4 million by eliminating vacancies and no pay increases. The Tinley Park shortfall for operating FY12 is $10.7 million. If Tinley Park closes, we will need an appropriation of $1.8 million for community reinvestment this year. The FY13 savings from closure of Tinley Park are projected to be approximately $16.5 million. Assuming an annualized $4.8 million in reinvestment in community services. There are no savings for this year since only funding was available for half a year, appropriated for half a year, and we'll need an additional appropriation to stay open beyond November 11th 2011 for services that must remain on campus at least for the remainder of this fiscal year, including the kitchen, dietary services which serve Ludeman, and the pharmacy. And those conclude my remarks. So.
Thank you, Dr. Jones. We'd like to introduce Robert Brock, Bob Brock, who is the director of the budget for the Department of Human Services.
Good afternoon, members of the commission. I'll be real brief. Dr. Jones covered a number of points that are on my list, too, so I'll be able to go through this pretty quickly. The difference between what was actually passed by the General Assembly and what was introduced by the governor is roughly $59 million, $58.7 million. That means that there's a deficit at the very beginning of the year of $58.7 million. So the question becomes with all of, this is for the entire mental health system. And what I'm going to talk about here is the system as a system, not Tinley Park only, but as the system as a system. We came up with about $16.3 million in savings by eliminating vacancies and some efficiencies that we were going to introduce in our mental health operations and the lack of a bargaining unit COLA and step increases for collective bargaining unit. That reduced it, as Dr. Jones noted, the deficit from 58.7 to roughly 42.4 million. We then looked at the closures, how else, you know, other ways to get the deficit down, and what we wound up with was the closure of Tinley, Singer, and Chester, and a net decrease of about 18.1 million in spending for those facilities. And then we had an additional need for spending for the community and for some operations at Alton Elgin and Chicago Reed and some more at McFarland. So we wound up with an increase in spending of $14.2 million, and that comes out to a net savings of $3.9 million. Now, there's also a need for capital improvements at McFarland, Elgin, and Alton, and we think that's going to be around $4.4 million. When you take that off of the net, you wind up with a slight deficit of $513,000. So we wind up with a difference between the savings and the need for spending for those facilities of a deficit of $513,000. That gives us a deficit, an overall deficit, of roughly $43 million. So even after closure of these facilities, we wind up with a deficit of close to $43 million.
That budget summary was provided to members of the commission, so we can certainly get additional copies for anyone who doesn't have it with them. Madam Chair, I want to say that that's the end of our remarks. The Deputy Director of Central Management Services is here today and has signed a witness slip in case members of the commission would have any questions about the property and disposition of the property. So he is available. His name is Nick Canalopoulos, and he is available if there are questions about the property. Before I put the microphone down, I just need to reiterate the condition and the liabilities that are facing us at Tinley Park Mental Health Center. We spoke at the recent decision hearing, about the deferred maintenance that we are facing for one of our developmental centers. We thought this was a huge deferred maintenance figure for a facility that was built in the last century, before this past century, and the Tinley Park Mental Health Center was built in the 1950s, and yet we're looking at $158 million of deferred maintenance, $158 million versus the other large number we're facing on the DD side of $102 million. And with that, we are here and able to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you very much. And there are some members who have already signed up so far. Representative McCarthy, Representative Riley, Senator Murphy. Any others? Senator Crotty. After Senator Murphy. Thank you. Oh, Senator Murphy said Senator Crotty can go before him. Thank you. Okay, we're going to start with Representative McCarthy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Brock, first off, You quote the difference in the allocation from what was requested. What was actually the allocation for FY11 versus the allocation for FY12?
The allocation for FY11 was 200 and now this includes the treatment and detention center, so I've got to subtract that off. About 225 million.
I'm asking what was the actual dollar figure from FY11 because we keep using the dollar figure from what the governor requested, and I don't think that's a fair number. The number should be compared to what you had from 1 year to the past. Correct, but the total, Mr. Brock just said, was about 220?
No, it's about close to 230. I was off.
230?
Yes.
So that's about $24 million less than the governor's request right off the bat. So it would be, of course, much less reduction when you look at it from the actual numbers as opposed to what was requested.
Yes.
Dr. Jones, you talked about just Tinley Park Mental Health Center and their budget. You said the average census, I believe there in your presentation, was there were 68 last year and 38 this year. But when you predicted what it would cost to operate the facility for the entire year, you came up with the exact same amount when they had 68 people versus the exact same versus this year with 38 as an average. And to the average person, that would seem, you should be able to do it for a little bit less money if the population is about, well, not quite half, but pretty close to half.
Well, I just said the census currently was 38. That's not the average census. The census currently is 38. And that is due to physician shortages. We capped the census actually at 51 because of physician shortages at the hospital.
And things like physician shortages means we're paying less of them. How come the budget didn't come down at all? I mean, why is it still 20.4 whether we have an average of 38 or whether we have an average of 68? That there should be some savings. Now, I know they're not immediate, but you have been working to reduce the census at Tinley Park over the last couple of years. It was over 100 a couple of years ago. Now it was 68 last year and down to 38 this year.
Well, we're not able to make the adjustments in labor and still have other costs. Essentially, we have to adjust the staffing based on clinical needs of the patients and the staffing that's available to support the needs of the patients. And psychiatrists is a critical shortage. We've been down almost half psychiatrists needed to serve the population, and so we have to adjust our census based on the number of clinical staff that we have to serve them. So even though we have ample numbers of other staff, if we still have critical shortages in specific areas, we have to adjust the census.
It seems like we should be able to adjust that staff in order to avoid, cataclysmic thing like closing completely. We have 30-day warning to tell people they're all out of their job, but yet we can't look at it when the census goes down and say we can reduce a few people here or move them to other sites. And it just doesn't seem to make sense to me. It was also remarked that we're using 8 out of 94 buildings. What's the most number of buildings that the mental health center ever operated? When you say 94 buildings, you're including all the Howe Developmental Center buildings as well, I would expect.
18.
So it's 8 out of 18 for the mental health side. Yeah. The other 76 are from Howe.
Or Howe, that's
okay.
Correct.
All right, thank you for your answers.
Mm-hmm. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. we've been all over the state engaging the public in these hearings regarding facility closings. And there are some things that are sort of mantras as we've gone along. You've talked about, problems in the budget, which will not allow you to fully fund and keep some of these centers open. And we've talked about the fact that the governor's office was involved in the budget negotiations from the beginning and certainly would have been in a position to raise red flags. But without going through those same kinds of things, here's some things that are certain, at least. The fact of the matter is this, and I think I asked this question before. If we were flush and the governor received everything that he had asked for, from DHS's standpoint, wasn't there really a policy plan, from your standpoint, to phase out state-operated developmental centers and probably some of these mental health centers? I mean, wasn't that really part of the plan, irrespective of whether we had adequate funding or not?
The long term, there is a long term plan on the developmental disability side. That long term plan did incorporate the input of a wide array of stakeholders, and it determined that we need to have a person centered system of care that provides for customers regardless of the severity of their need, and that is rooted in community-based services. How that plan will be implemented, or how it would be implemented if we were flush, would be determined this year. We had been in dialogue with a couple of members of the General Assembly who are interested in working with us to introduce that long-term plan, and then we were faced with this budget, which interrupted that more thoughtful process. On the mental health side, the General Assembly has asked us similarly to have a long-term plan. That process is beginning this month, November, and Dr. Jones, I'll ask you to take over from there on the mental health side.
Yes, and so I'm sure that most of you are aware that 970438 was passed last year, and that requires the state to have in place a strategic plan for mental health by February 2013. That planning is to begin later this month in November. So we will begin to convene that group of people. I think there are several legislators, up to seven or so legislators, to be part of that task force, as well as mental health experts and agencies, sister agencies and experts. I think that it's very necessary to have this longer-term strategic plan. There's so many moving parts in the context that we operate in that we must consider the impact of those factors on the mental health system at large, and so we're looking forward, very much forward, to that process.
The point still exists, and this is the point. We can talk about a plan for how we, you know, deal with and take care of these vulnerable populations. My point is that there was a plan to reduce the number of these facilities, you know, irrespective of how much money we had. So I just, you know, want to get that out on the record that this whole issue of you're making your decisions based on inappropriate appropriations, I'm not going to say that's disingenuous, but what I'm going to say is it sort of skirts the issue in many ways. People have long memories, and I know that a lot of the people in this community remember 2008, and it goes to a second question. They remember 2008. They remember what happened with the closing of Howe, which was extremely painful, with people being displaced and skilled workers losing their jobs and so forth. And one thing that people still tell me to this day, because it really rings resonant, and you brought it up too, they really thought that there was going to be a replacement facility for Tinley Park, and so that there would be a state-run facility, whether we call it Tinley Park or University Park or something somewhere out in the Southland. They really expected that. Now, one of the things that you said was administration changes and the Affordable Care Act obviated the need for a hospital. And thank God that the president came up with that very prescient bill. But we also know that even though some of the provisions of that bill are taking place right now, many of them will be years later, number one. Number two, something doesn't square in terms of timing. Who knew in 2008 that we'd have the president that we have and that he would come up with a sweeping omnibus bill with all of the opposition that he had? Who knew that would happen? So someone out there might say, what happened, DHS, in those two intervening years? They saw no planning for the new facility. They really didn't see anything. So how would you answer that?
2010 came along,
and we know what happened. But what happened between 2008 and 2010?
Well, a couple things happened. One was that, of course, President Obama was elected. We knew there was a lot of interest and momentum around healthcare reform. And so I believe we prudently waited and watched to see what was going to happen with health care reform, which is, of course, you know, going to change the context significantly. And, you know, to your point, there may be changes in health care reform. So when I said that this task force should consider a lot of contextual factors as it plans for the system, we need to watch that carefully also.
The point that I'm making is that as you were watching, I mean, you know, legislation at the state level, you know, who knows how it's going to end up after negotiations and, you know, the sort of internecine warfare that goes back and forth with getting anything passed. That definitely existed at the federal level. So it almost seems as though you were kind of betting on the come that cooler heads would prevail and that we would get a sensible health care bill. And I'm just saying, it doesn't show sort of a continuum of really striving, you know, to help this community deal with their mental health issues. You know, we've been all over the state, and we talked about the impact of losing some of these facilities in small communities. Well, here we are up here, Chicago metropolitan area. We got more people. You have more people with more needs. And, you know, the impact is greater up here. And again, I just think that, you know, it's really problematic. Something else I talked about, the importance of having these economic impact studies to show what the contribution to these facilities would be on the local economy. And for Tinley Park, we're talking about $49.3 million of local economic activity. As you talk about some of the savings that would be engendered by closing this facility, are those savings net of any monies that would be needed to build capacity in the community? And do they take in consideration this $49 million of local economic activity that would be lost with the closing of this facility?
The numbers do not take into account the economic impact, but they do take into account some of the money that will have to be spent in the community to replace some of these services.
Okay, so they're really not net of the spending that would have to be done.
Well, the deficit is net of an assumption that there's going to be between $4 and $5 million in community spending needed in FY12, but But they do not have anything. Do not assume anything in terms of the impact of the economic impact, the overall economic impact that you cited.
Those things need to be taken into consideration. It would be an extremely, extremely big loss to this community, and not just the community. We're talking about regions, the entire region, certainly if this facility were to close. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Crotty.
Thank you very much. First of all, I'm going to speak to some of the issues that I'm the most familiar with. And that would start with when we had the Katrina victims coming out. I know myself and a few of the providers out here worked in the Tinley Park mental health facilities back then with the Katrina victims. That was the first time in a very long time that I was actually in Tinley Park mental health facility. So what you saw as your tour today, I saw back then. And back then, I realized, and that's almost 10 years ago, I realized that that facility is outdated for the way we treat persons with disabilities today and persons with mental illness. So we started a commission. And in that process, I worked with Infinitech Southwest before I became a legislator that shares those grounds. So I was familiar with all the property that is out there and how much of that do we actually utilize as a state. And there's property that we could have, in my mind back then, could sell off portions of that property and build a new facility. And we started a commission that said just that. And it was run by the University of Illinois. And again, here's another commission that all of us put our dollars toward to start planning for a region. And they came with a 100-bed facility, a new facility. I was called upon at one point to go and talk to President Stroger and see if I could find some county property. At first he said no, and then I was asked to go out and talk to him myself, and he said he would. After that time, he passed. I even got into my car and rode out to a facility in Lamont that was closed. That facility was absolutely beautiful. Everything we would have looked for came furnished. I was so excited that I pulled over in the neighborhood and called John Filan in Springfield to tell him what I had found. We did nothing. We did nothing. And here we are today with the idea of getting a new facility to treat people in this region. This region is the south side of Chicago, all of the south suburbs, Kankakee County, and a growing community like Will County. Do I think we need a facility to treat persons with mental illness? Absolutely. For that large of a population, we do. So as we look back and we see that maybe this is sort of dovetailing on what Representative Riley said, we had ample time to realize that we do need a 100-bed facility. We could have sold off portions of that property for development and used that money to build a facility that we could serve our constituents and their families that have a real need. I know that I have thanked some of you at that table when I have gotten phone calls from the hospitals, not only in my district, but as far as 95th, that's Christ Community, from the emergency rooms, stating that they had persons that went to Tinley and were sent to the hospitals, and they don't call me until the first time they had somebody in an emergency room for 2 days. Now, those of us that have ever gone into an emergency room, 6 hours wait was enough. But for somebody who is not going to be served for that illness and to be in a small emergency room for 2 days is unconscionable. But then I got a phone call a few months ago. I had a hospital that had someone there 5 days. And then we're sent out. To send someone from here to Madden, you may as well have just thrown them right back out on the street, because there's no way for them to get to Madden. The dual diagnosis that many people with mental illness is also with substance abuse. That's a factor that all of us in this room know. But we as a state have the money, because the governor does have discretionary funds to keep that open until January till we come back. And when we're going to be looking at another budget. And as we look at the entire budget, we need to make sure that we prioritize who needs those dollars the most. When we talk about a savings, there's not going to be a savings. One of my community providers for mental health that I work with monthly, if not biweekly, on constituent services, we owe them over $2 million. I've had to call to get emergency checks just to keep them open so they can make their payroll. So it's going to be costly as we send people into the hospitals. We're going to have to pay hospitals. It's our community providers. The last count that I've gotten for this whole region is 10. We have 10 community providers. And unfortunately, the saddest part is many of them will be in our penal system because they did not get the help on the outside. Not that long ago, we had a gentleman that, in fact, sexually abused an elderly person right here in the south suburbs. Mental health is his issue. We've had another one a few years back that sat on a park bench in front of one of our drugstores for hours and then got up and started stabbing people in the parking lot. Not all persons with mental illness are like this. But the sad part is, if they were treated and on their medications, their family members would come out after they're caught and say they've been off their medications. So the less services that we have for those persons, the sadder I get for the persons that have that illness and their families, but then there's a public safety issue too. So when I listen to all of these plans, I say that we did have plans and we've never really acted on them. And for a legislator to be out looking at real estate and finding something and making a phone call and then be sitting here today begging the state to please stay open for the most vulnerable of our constituents and help for these families, there is no other place to turn to. And 5 days in an emergency room when that emergency staff and that hospital is not equipped for those patients, I think is just a travesty. I think we should all be ashamed. So. So when we look and when we say there's a savings, there is a savings, I think that there isn't, because somewhere along this chain, there's going to be somebody that's absolutely going to serve those people, and there is a cost to it. And I think that we as a state should be very upfront about that, and we're not paying our bills now, and I think we should look at opening up that 100-bed facility by breaking off those acres, selling them. Now's a bad time, isn't it? Real estate's down. But we could have done that and been ahead of this game. But we have these commissions, we have these studies, we get the results, and we do nothing. And here we are today. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Crotty. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I have said at a couple of these, I understand that the administration has a difficult job here. Governing is difficult when you are looking at a lot of needs and wishes and less money. That being said, there's a couple of points that need to be stressed. The statement was made at the beginning that the governor had a budget proposal that would have covered all of this. But what isn't said continually as we go to these hearings is that the governor's original introduced budget spent $35.4 billion, which is $1.2 billion out of balance, more than we were going to take in revenue. So to come out and in a vacuum say, well, the governor had a budget for it, the governor had a budget that didn't actually meet with reality of what we were going to take in revenue. So it's a disingenuous suggestion to say that somehow the General Assembly didn't want to deal with the issue, but that the governor did when the governor submitted a budget that was out of balance by $1.2 billion. It is not a responsible statement to make in a debate about tough choices. Similarly, and in the same vein, and Senator Crotty touched on this, you know, there is an ability within law for the governor to move 2% within an appropriation, within a department. In DHS, which is what we're here, the flag we're under here, the department we're under here, there is $48.9 million in authority. So theoretically, the governor could, if he wanted, if he chose, with the budget that the General Assembly gave him, fund all of these priorities. Now, I don't necessarily think he should, and I don't want to seem as if I do, but that option is there. So to continue with this banging away at the suggestion that the budget isn't enough, in fact, the budget probably will lead us, well, by the governor's own numbers, the budget that passed will result in a bigger deficit by nearly $500 million than the one we started the fiscal year with. And even within that, there is the spending authority in law for the governor unilaterally, without any involvement from the General Assembly, to keep facilities open, every single one in DHS, if he chose to. And again, I don't say that to suggest that I think he should. That isn't my point. But to come and continue to suggest that, oh, that mean old General Assembly just didn't give me enough money, by the way, after a $7-plus billion income tax, isn't an accurate picture and isn't helpful in trying to solve these problems. So with that, I do appreciate the difficulty of your challenge, but I think it's important that the full perspective be given to the budget situation.
Senator Murphy, thank you. Just to clarify, on the 2% transfer authority, we have certainly looked at that as an option across the board for all of these shortfalls we're experiencing with all of the different agencies. That transfer authority, while it does exist, is very limited in terms of how it can be used, and in particular for Tinley Park, which has its own line item lump sum, that transfer authority cannot be used for Tinley Park. So I just want the commission to recognize that we have looked at that. We agree with you that we've tried to use the discretionary authority that we have, but unfortunately, with respect to Tinley Park, that's not an option for us.
Are there other DHS facilities of the other four? Are there any that transfer that those transfer funds can be used for?
No. The basically the State Finance Act says that you can transfer up to 2% of a certain list of appropriations, but it specifically excludes grant lines and lump sums. So because things are in lump sums, like Tinley Park is a lump sum, the SODCs are now in a lump sum instead of line items, and the mental health facilities, except for TDF, are in a lump sum. So that means that you can't transfer into or out of either any of those lines. So what we have right now is basically all we have in those lump sums.
And are you aware of any contrary legal opinion on that point?
No.
Are you aware of any instances in the recent past where there was a broader interpretation and application of the transferability rule?
No. The only thing I can think of is in FY10 and in FY11, the governor had the lump sums, which he was able to distribute.
Right, which is a different context from
yes,
this one.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I was just about to the point to ask you, Senator Murphy, if you wanted us to solicit an opinion from the Attorney General as to whether or not she thought it was within the realm of authority for them to do that. Representative Colvin.
Thank you, Senator Schoenberg. I'll be brief. Sometime a little more than 3 years ago, when I personally got involved in and started attending some of the hearings, both in Springfield and at the Tinley Park Mental Health Center, as well as Howe, and the discussion was revolving around closing Howe at the time, and at the urging of Senator Crotty to come and be part of this discussion, as well as some contacts I've got from constituents in my district who had family members housed there. A large part of that discussion at that time, and my rationale was around this issue of diminishing that safety net that existed in the Southland with respect to families who needed these services. It was unfortunate, in my own opinion, that it resulted in a closure. And here now we are discussing the closure and the further diminishing of this safety net dealing with families who absolutely need these services. And in one of the compelling factors in this that was not only about state government and fiscal accountability, but the huge family and personal issue and these families and how they were personally being impacted and how they expressed that to us as legislators, which is also part of the decision-making that we face every day, is the impact on government on human lives, and how the families who had residents there felt so strongly about this issue and keeping those centers open. It's in my own opinion that I think as a result of one budget year in a budget where there was no prior discussion of funding levels in a result of how the administration would react to them in closing these centers, to suggest that now that as a result of one budget year that we should take the drastic step of closing this center in Tinley Park seems to be a little short-sighted. Dr. Jones, you mentioned in your testimony that there may be some potential benefits from the federal health care legislation that passed last year, earlier this year, in Congress. Is it too early to consider what that impact would be for the Tinley Park Mental Health Center, or are we still in a wait-and-see pattern? In your opinion, I'd just like to, you mentioned it in the context that this may be a potential benefit. In what way, as it relates to Tinley Park, do you see it being a benefit?
As far as we know now, the legislation that has passed in March 2010, as I testified to earlier, we expect about 600,000 uninsured residents of Illinois to become insured as of 2014. That means they'll either have Medicaid or gain insurance through the insurance exchanges. Either way, they will have access to care, should have access to care in the private sector. So if you have Medicaid or insurance, you can go to any hospital that you know takes your insurance. And so when people are treated also in the private sector outside of IMDs, and state hospitals are IMDs, Institutes of Mental Disease, which preclude them from getting federal match on any hospital stay. So as long as people are treated in state hospitals, they cannot, the state cannot get FFP for their stay. When they're treated in the private sector, in the community hospitals, the state can get FFP on those Medicaid inpatient stays.
And okay, thank you for that.
I'd just like to underscore that point. It was one that I really, it took me a while to understand it, but our state-operated hospitals do not receive federal match now, not because of the ineligibility of the people being treated there, acute care patients. It is that the federal government has a specific exclusion for these institutions that are categorized as IMDs, as Dr. Jones said. She shared with me that historically, the federal government did not want to cover all state costs for what we historically considered asylums. So there is a specific exclusion. When Medicaid is expanded, we hope in the future, if people are cared for in the community, then we will get that federal match. If they remain in these state hospitals, we will forego the match that might be otherwise available for those individuals.
Thank you. As it relates to budget making and process, for the last 10 years, my 10 years here in the General Assembly, when we talk about closures and drastic so-called cutbacks in terms of what's realized as savings, has not quite materialized as simple as I think some would lay out on pen and paper. Clearly, and I agree with Maggie's assertion that what we're really doing here by closing a facility such as Tinley Park is pushing these costs around in state government, a lot of it being picked up by the police and incarceration and other health care bills and piling up those obligations, as well as to local governments who are under considerable and enormous pressure to meet their obligations. I think the state of Illinois has a clear responsibility to these patients, to these families, to these taxpayers, to meet these obligations. And lastly, it just appears to me to not be clearly thought out that to react to a short-term situation like this past budget year, in light of all the other elements that could potentially happen, notwithstanding health care, which we still have to make the decision whether or not we're going to, the state of Illinois will implement the federal government's health care plan, or we let the federal government do it. I think will also impact on the bottom line in terms of what these costs will be to these centers. But clearly, it appears where there is no long-term plan here. I think the long-term effects will be a shrinking safety net, a shrinking system, where there has really been nothing concrete that we can depend on and count on with respect to how we're going to serve this population going forward. That's something I think we should seriously consider and definitely hold off in closing these facilities. Thank you for your time.
If I may.
Representative Bellick.
Thank you. I just had a couple of questions. Primarily, my main question is, you know, where the people are going to go with the 1,900 people that were served in the 60 beds over the last year. And I know you've briefly discussed that here, but I just wanted to, I think, you know, community services are one thing, but I wanted to ask about really acute, I think you would refer to it as inpatient psychiatric care, which is, I think, what those 60 beds and the 1,900 people were, correct? So in the alternatives that you've given to us, Reed, Chicago Reed, will they provide that type of care?
Only as a last resort. We would first go and have had conversations, as I testified to earlier, conversations with five hospitals who are, you know, willing to work with us on providing care to these individuals. So we would, of course, work with the private sector first. And then Madden is, you know, has closer proximity to the region than Chicago Reed. But we would adjust the boundaries for Madden to make more space at Madden so that Chicago Reed would take more of that population if need be.
Are those five hospitals, because all I've heard from the hospitals is that they don't have room and they've cut back their psychiatric beds. That's in my area over in DuPage County. I don't know here if those five hospitals are in this area.
Yeah, they're in the planning area for Region 1 South. If you look at the some of the data, then most of them, the average occupancy for those hospitals is about 57%, slightly higher occupancy rate in Chicago's hospitals on the south side of Chicago that we've also talked to.
Okay, because McFarland, that's all the way in Springfield.
That's correct.
So, I mean, that wouldn't
not,
be an alternative
no,
for
no.
here. So, Alton, where is that located?
Alton is in all the way south in Alton, Illinois.
How far is that from here? Oh, St. Louis.
Yeah.
So that's not really an option here
no,
either.
No.
Because you've got another thing, 15 beds for treatment, but Singer, actually where we had a
right.
hearing, is closer, a lot closer than that.
Right.
What is the percentage of the people in Tinley Park from this area? Do you know?
From
the south suburbs.
From the south suburbs.
I mean, is it like when we went to Murfreesboro in the southern part of the state, two-thirds were from up northern part of the state?
40% are from south suburban Cook.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so Alton is not an alternative. McFarland is not an alternative. Is Elgin an alternative? You've got 25 beds.
You know, a remote possibility. Again, we would most rely on the hospitals in the Chicago area.
Okay, my concern is Secretary Sadler said the notices were going out tomorrow as far as the layoffs, mm-hmm. so you're talking about 30 days away.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a commitment in writing by these hospitals to take these people when those 60 beds are closed at Tinley if it's 30 days from now?
Right. We don't have a commitment in writing because the farthest that we could go in planning, frankly, was just to have conversations with people. We didn't want to enter into final negotiations, but we're prepared to take that next step.
Okay. I just had another question. Being that you talked about, or somebody talked about, 23% of the people were substance abuse. And my concern over that is in the Human Service Appropriate Working Committees that the substance abuse people feel that they were cut not 5% like most of the groups, but 25%. Those are a lot of the community services. So my fear is that the people that you're talking about that would go to those, that they're being cut back on their services already.
Right. And we firmly believe that in order to maintain the safety net, that we would need an appropriation. We need money to invest in the community. There's no doubt about it. So that, you know, we would invest in substance abuse residential services, you know, notwithstanding the cuts that both that system and the mental health system have faced this year. We would have to invest in those services.
But the $45 million that we've talked about at all these hearings and transitional costs, Is that included in anything to do with Tinley Park?
No.
Okay. Was that just regarding DD facilities, or excuse me?
Well, between the two systems, SODCs and the mental health hospitals, the deficit's about $75 million. So we've got roughly, I think it was $43 million and, in mental health, and I've got the DD right here. DD's 34. So we're running right about $75 million, $70, $75 million deficit, even with closures.
Okay, so who made the final decision? Because it wasn't made in the Human Service Appropriate Committee regarding a half a year for a specific institution or mental health center. The administration?
No, that was in House Bill 3717.
Specifically?
Tinley Park Mental Health Center was specifically set apart as its own line item.
Okay, great. Then that's all my questions.
And one thing, Representative Belloc, about the alternative care for those specific 35 patients. Dr. Jones has talked about capacity in the community. Federal CMMS has done a survey and located beds that are available. Of course, paying for care is a problem wherever we need care in the state. But for those 35 individual people, please remember that these are acute care patients. The average length of stay at Tinley Park Mental Health Center is 11 days. So once we close admissions, the census goes down rapidly.
But to clarify, and I got this mixed up before, if you're talking about a DD facility, you're talking about a single person in a bed. In this, when I read, if you had 60 beds, that was 1,900 people that were serviced over the last year. So that's my concern. Is that if you're, you know, maybe if there's just 35 beds now, does that mean that you had 800 people that would need, you know, those services over if they were just there for 12 days apiece? Is that correct? About,
yeah. Yes, and they need, and we need places for them to go. There is capacity. The question, of course, and we're in negotiations and conversations with community hospitals, is whether the community hospitals will accept these patients and whether we as a state have cash or appropriation to pay them.
Okay, and this is my last comment. Somebody mentioned 438 beds and a 58% capacity. Where were the 438 beds? In all those other mental health facilities you were talking about that aren't close by here?
No, they're not state. These are private beds.
Okay.
All of those are private beds in the region. Yes.
Okay, all right. Great, thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative McCarthy and then Senator Crotty for a second time, and then I'd like to move on to the next panel if we can.
Thank you, Chairman. Very quickly now, the other closures, we've looked at the overall budget, and it's like a 12% to 13% reduction. And in some places like Logan, it was just a couple percent, it seemed like, and we're closing down the entire place. When you saw the budget bill come forward, it seems like just by the number in the budget bill, which you had mentioned is $10.7 million, like close to one half of what it was the year before. I mean, how come we wait until September? It seems like we should have known that was scheduled. If you were going to stay within that budget, something had to be done at Tinley. How come we weren't? I mean, you did put the letter out early September. I understand it. Now it's November. It seems like it's later. So it was 60-some days into it. But how come we didn't know about this in the first 15 days of the new fiscal year? Because it was obviously, I mean, you made it clear that that was the money that we voted on, and you know, a little bit of egg on our face right now, but I'm saying that how come we didn't talk about this? We could have had a much more structured closing the more time we have, instead of just giving people a 30-day notice. Sheila, is it?
Thank you, Representative. I mean, I think, first of all, leading up to the budget being passed, we had discussions with various members of the legislature, alerting them to these issues, and as soon as the budget was passed, we did at OMB start very quickly and seriously looking at all of the various issues. It's a big budget. There were a lot of different issues we had to explore. We wanted to see if there were other ways to try to address the shortfalls, whether there were other discretionary transfer authorities or things of that nature. The first step we took, of course, was to try to address it in
putting a freeze on the union pay raises to at least recoup some of those funds.
I think this one should have been such a red flag. I would have preferred had you at least informed some of the local legislators that, the surprise that the other six were on the closure list is one thing, but the surprise this is on there should have been really a surprise, and we wish we would have the whole year, and maybe we could have worked on it. Has the administration requested any appropriation to correct this up till now?
Yes, the administration has a full-blown plan to reallocate appropriations based on the governor's vetoes that have been communicated. The plan has been communicated over the last number of weeks. We've had many meetings with members of appropriate committees for human services, for general services, and so forth. And we do have a proposal that would allow us to reallocate appropriations in order to address some of these shortfalls.
And that would include, like, the approximately $10 million shortfall for the Tinley Park budget for this year?
That is part of the overall plan, yes.
Could you give me what the number is on that appropriation bill? I'd appreciate it at a later date. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Crotty.
Thank you very much. You mentioned that at the closing that the hospitals in the surrounding area would be able to pick up those patients. Can you name me the hospitals that said they would do that?
Since these were informal discussions, I would let the hospitals speak for themselves, but I would be able to share that with you privately.
I think they're waiting to be called.
All right, if there are no further questions from members of the commission for the panelists, ask you to stay nearby, and we'll call up the next panel, some of whom we've heard from already. This panel consists of Representative Riley, Representative McCarthy, Representative Colvin, Senator Crotty, Will County Executive and former Senator, my dear friend Larry Walsh, and Paul Kaupis, the Sheriff of Will County. If you could come forward to the table, and whenever you're ready, we'll begin. All right, we'll give leave to the panelists who are already up here to make their remarks from here. If we could ask, especially for those who are up here with the commission members, you've all had an opportunity to make some remarks already. If you could hold it to 2 minutes, it would be greatly appreciated. We have a lengthy agenda. Senator Trotter?
Here you go.
Right. Senator Trotter has had six hearings to learn from Representative Nekritz on how to be an effective timekeeper, and I'm sure he'll do a great job.
I'm not volunteering. I was actually.
No, I know that you were recruited based on your skill set.
Based on the real timer here. So we will be fair.
Okay, why don't we hear from someone who has not yet spoken? Larry Walsh, please proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairman Schoenberg and Chairman Belloc and members of the committee, to be here today to talk about this very important issue. I can't tell, as County Executive of Will County, the fastest growing county in the state of Illinois, I can't tell you how much Tinley Park Mental Health Center has meant to our community, to our county. Dr. Joe Triani, who's from the Will County Health Department, will be up here to speak a little later on. He has many of the details. But just basically, I wanted to echo the comments that Senator Crotty made. She was right on in her comments. And in fact, when I had the honor to serve in the Illinois Senate with her and former Senator Debbie Halverson, we represented the area of Tinley Park Mental Health. And when the former administration was talking about stepping away from and closing this facility, we all agreed to make a pact to stick together that said no closing of this facility unless you build something else. And that's what I'm here today to say. Knowing the financial situation of the state of Illinois, I understand that. You have some very valuable property there. But if you do sell that, I ask that there is a facility to take its place. I think Representative Riley made the same comment. You can't sell an asset, put the money in the corporate fund, and basically ask the people, the residents, the people that have mental illness, to carry the load. We are not going to solve the problems of the state of Illinois on the back of those that need our help. And so I firmly believe that this facility, whether it's this one or one comparable, we need it. If we don't have a facility like this, then what are we going to do? Our hospitals, as the director has said, our emergency rooms, our Morningstar missions, and maybe lastly, unfortunately, our Will County Sheriff's Office and adult facility will be the reception center for our people that need this help. Thank you for your time.
Sheriff.
Good afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity. My name is Dr. Donald McKinney, and I am superintendent of schools for West Harvey Dix Sporting School District 147. As such, I speak to you today as a representative of the District 147 Board of Education and community. As you may or may not be aware, the South Suburban area has been hit harder than any other part of the Chicago Southland when it comes to high unemployment, high poverty, and high crime. I'm here today because I have met with local ministers, local mayors, and other community leaders who believe it is our time. Our time to be heard and our time to be afforded the same opportunities as those who live in the northern and western suburbs. This community is not willing to continue sitting on the sidelines and allow the state of Illinois to balance its budget on the most needy and marginalized members of the Chicagoland area. A letter I received from Governor Quinn in response to my concerns on the closing of the Tinley Park facility included his typical excuse of blaming the General Assembly and not allocating the funds. I believe I am talking to a bipartisan group who work for all of us in Springfield, and I respectfully say to you, get to work and quit allowing Governor Quinn to use this excuse. The facility in Tinley Park is not just a major employer for our area. It is a safety net and safeguard for so many with mental disease. Now is not the time to further the burdens of those in South Chicagoland. I urge you to do the right thing and do the work necessary to keep this facility open. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Senator Crotty has waived her time and allocated it to her former colleague, Larry Walsh. Would anyone else who's already spoken, who sits up here at the front table, care to follow suit? I didn't think so. Representative Riley, then.
Thank you. With all due respect, my earlier speaking had to do with asking questions. But I will make it brief. Essentially, brief as I can, this facility must stay open for myriad reasons. 3 years ago, when Howe closed, one of the things that I said and that many constituents said for all of us, to deal the cards up straight. Let us know what's going on. And frankly, there's been, and they did a great job at it, lobbying efforts for closures, and things were said that were in fact disingenuous, that gave people an idea that folks weren't working as hard as they work. and that patients weren't being taken care of, and that just was not the truth. We're moving too quickly here. As I say, there's a lot of different reasons. I speak, along with some of my fellow legislators in the South Suburbs, at many healthcare forums. Matter of fact, there's two major hospitals in the area that we spoke at. And one of the things that all the healthcare professionals tell us, you know, they can talk about nurses' acuity and other kinds of issues, reimbursement issues, but one of the things that they said was, and this was a few weeks ago, that the impact of closing the Tinley Park Mental Health Center would be deleterious to them. They just could not pick up the capacity. That's what they said. That's what they said, not us. The South Suburban region, many people feel, is that they're really being put upon. Look at the retrenchment that's going on in the Cook County health system. What's going on there? Hospital turns into a an urgent care center. Hopefully it will, you know, take care of the needs of the people who go to it. But, you know, they've lost the level one trauma center and all of these different things. So they see this as just a snowball effect, which is going to negatively affect. I'm getting there. Which is going to negatively affect, you know, the delivery of care to the people in the South Suburban region. So there's no surprise where when we go to these hearings all over the state, other entities that you wouldn't think would have anything to do with the healthcare system, like county sheriffs, have been involved in the discussions. This is a big issue. It goes way beyond just this plain closure. And so we can't, you know, proceed unless we're prudent. This facility should stay open. We voted on a bipartisan basis to keep the other four facilities open. And we should do the same thing with Tinley Park. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative McCarthy? Okay. Representative Colvin, you wish to make further remarks?
No. I'm just 30 seconds. I just want to agree with Al Riley with respect to his issue dealing with how Cook County government is also seeking to shrink their health care services. And not surprisingly enough, we're still talking about the Southland of Cook County and how that will overall impact on the delivery of health care. What's interesting with respect to the Cook County issue is how the county indicated that St. James Hospital would be happy to take all of those folks who would be turned away at the county when they shut the door essentially at 11 o'clock each night. But once we reached out to the folks at St. James, they simply said that that was not the case. Once again, before we make such drastic decisions that will have an overwhelming and long-term impact and effect on the entire region, I think it would be beyond prudent for all of us to take a step back, not react to one budget cycle, which we all too often do, and take a longer approach and figure out how we're going to serve Cook County. Senator Trotter, I'm done.
Thank you. Any questions, comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll actually, Dr. McKinney, I was going to ask you to come up with the next group because we've had some addition, but we've heard from you once, so.
Yeah.
Is the sheriff here?
Yes.
Okay. We have some additions to panel number three. Michael Woods, on behalf of State's Attorney Glasgow, if you could come forward. Sandy Stavropoulos, Assistant State's Attorney, Supervisor of the Mental Health Division, Cook County State's Attorney's Office, if you could come forward, please. Dr. Troiani, if you could come forward, and if Tony Dubois, did I pronounce your name correctly, the Deputy Chief for Markham, if you could come forward as well, that'll take care of panel three.
Whenever you're ready, please proceed.
I would first like to thank the commission for agreeing to have this public hearing. My name is Michael Woods, and I'm here.
Could you get a little closer, please, so we can hear? Thanks.
I apologize. Is this better? First, I'd like to thank the commission for agreeing to have this public hearing. My name is Michael Woods, and I'm here on behalf of James W. Glasgow, the Will County State's Attorney. Will County State's Attorney's Office opposes the closure of the Tinley Park Mental Health Center. As you are likely aware, State's Attorney's Offices are stakeholders in the availability of public and patient treatment for the severely mentally ill through both civil and criminal justice systems. Civilly, we represent the people's interest in involuntarily committing those persons who, by reason of their mental illness, are either dangerous to themselves or others or unable to care for themselves. Criminally, the severely mentally ill may be found unfit to stand trial or not guilty by reason of insanity and require treatment, and some within that group require extended care. As an assistant state's attorney and former assistant public defender, I have practiced in each of these legal arenas dealing with the severely mentally ill. I've witnessed desperate relatives of the severely mentally ill reach out to law enforcement to coerce acute inpatient treatment of suicidal loved ones. I have been involved when parents are battered by their mentally ill son or daughter trying to convince them to seek treatment, only to see them incarcerated rather than hospitalized. I've also witnessed those same parents decide not to bail them out because inpatient care is not available. In these terrible situations where inpatient treatment is legitimately needed, the legal authority, procedures, and remedies are readily available to the Will County State's Attorney's Office, but sadly, the availability of inpatient treatment is not. Tinley Park Mental Health Center is the only public inpatient psychiatric treatment facility in the region, supplementing only two hospitals in Will County with inpatient psychiatric treatment units, both with limited bed availability. In today's economy, with severe restrictions in resources and revenues, we are all urged to focus on the bottom line. In this case, the bottom line is not simply a monetary figure and a red slash through a budget line item, or, with regard to the Will County State's Attorney's Office, increased civil commitment filings, an increased jail population, and increased waiting times for those found unfit to stand trial or found not guilty by reason of insanity. Thinking in those terms is short-sighted on every level. We pay dearly for shutting Tinley Park Mental Health Center, both in terms of human tragedies and the extraordinary cost to society as these mentally ill patients circulate through our communities without treatment and support necessary to keep everyone safe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Sandy Stavropoulos. I want to thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to speak on behalf of Cook County State's Attorney Anita Alvarez. I supervise a unit within the Cook County State's Attorney's Office that handles approximately 4,000 mental health cases every year. So my unit and I am in a particularly good position to speak on this issue. Something I haven't heard mentioned yet today is the fact that, yes, we may be losing Tinley, which would be a very unfortunate occurrence, and we are definitely against such closure. But what was not brought up is the fact that along with this plan is the plan to transfer Reed from an acute care facility to a long-term care facility. So we are, in essence, losing those beds as well, leaving us with solely MAD Mental Health Center for this population. As Senator Crotty pointed out, she took away a lot of my thunder and brought up a lot of the things I was going to talk about, but she made some good points. Keep in mind, we're talking about acutely mentally ill here who are being brought to the ER. They're brought to the ER at many hospitals that are woefully understaffed and undertrained in their ability to handle mentally ill patients. Those patients are forced to sit there sometimes for days. This is, number one, a violation of many of the procedural rules of the mental health code, but it also is inhumane in that these people are mentally ill, in crisis, spiraling out of control as they sit there waiting for treatment, which doesn't come unless and until they are transferred to a mental health facility. And who's going to pay for that? Who's going to pay for that transfer? Private hospitals? I think not. What's really going to happen is those patients are going to be released out onto the street where they came from to get more and more and more ill and dangerous in some cases. And let me tell you, I also supervise cases committed against senior citizens and disabled, many of them violent, many of them committed by those with mental health issues that have gone untreated. Based upon all this, it would be the state's attorney of Cook County's position that this hospital must remain open.
I'm Dr. Joe Triani, Director of Behavioral Health Programs for the Will County Health Department. I also chair the Will and Grundy County Adult LAN. We're a group of behavioral health providers, including the hospitals, that meet monthly and have been since June of 1993. The decision to close is coming after 6 years of discussion and planning for the closure, which the Will County Health Department has been in a leadership role with the adult LAN. The problem is the state intends to close Tinley without following any of the plans that have been developed for the closure. There's also other major implications of the pending closure, which I'll detail as follows. The state plans to close the inpatient beds at Tinley without transferring them to another SOF or replacing them with a replacement hospital, which was part of the original plan. Will and Grundy County has close to 400 admissions to Tinley annually. These are individuals without funding, health insurance, Medicaid, Medicare, and are in medical need. Let me emphasize that. They're in medical need of inpatient psychiatric hospitalization. In our meetings, we work very closely with our two emergency rooms at Silver Cross Hospital and Provena St. Joe's Hospital. I met with them a month ago. We looked at the data. Today, with Tinley open, individuals without funding are waiting on the average of 47 and a half hours in order to get a psychiatric bed. The impact of the closure at Tinley will bring that figure to 3 to 5 days. With the loss of beds, this is a tremendous burden on our emergency rooms, tying up medical staff, not to even address increased costs. This is catastrophic in terms of its impact on our emergency rooms. Some of the safety net programs we had, EPS, Emergency Psychiatric Services, CHIPS, Community Hospital Inpatient Psychiatric Funds, have been eliminated. So the safety net funding that we had is now gone. The state of Illinois requires that the cost savings would be reinvested in the community, and DMH has told us this is not part of the plan. We talk about capacity. This fiscal year, we have reduced community services by 25%. There's no capacity out there. In fact, there's decreasing capacity.
Excuse me, could you wrap your remarks up? Do you have prepared written remarks?
Yes, I do.
If you could,
I just want to, in closing, we talked about the Affordable Health Care Act. I get calls from your staffers stating you have a constituent with Medicaid. They need a psychiatrist, and they can't find a psychiatrist. So the idea that with more people on Medicaid, we're going to be able to get them psychiatric care is a false. We cannot get psychiatrists to take Medicaid, and that's a whole other story. We also don't have the capacity hospital-wise. I just want to alert you, because sometimes you hear numbers.
Excuse me, we want to be considerate of the other speakers who are to follow as well. If you could furnish us with a copy of your remarks, we'd appreciate it. Representative Bellick, you have a question?
Thank you very much. I appreciated your testimony. Sandy, I just wanted to ask you, and I guess I'm going to ask somebody after we go over yours later on for somebody from our state of agency to come back up, because in our book where it says the recommendation for closure, it mentions, because I had overlooked that Reed part of this, and it mentions Chicago Reed Mental Health Center in Chicago will be expanding its responsibility for the treatment of extended care patients.
That's correct. It was my understanding that it was going to be primarily an extended care facility. That's the information I received. Losing, then, the beds for acute care patients.
Okay, so losing the acute care beds they have now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any suggestions of any other, I mean, I'm not that familiar with this area, of any other places around here that could be used outside, because you see 4,000 of these people. I mean, I don't know if they're going.
There are currently some private hospitals in the Southland who do have beds, very minimal numbers for the most part. I don't know if any of those hospitals are hospitals that have been contacted, because that information apparently is not free to be given to us, because I know Senator Crotty requested the names of those hospitals. I'd really like to know who they are too, because it's been my experience anytime any requests are made of private hospitals to expend any funds outside the realm of their normal responsibilities, it has never been agreed to and never been done. I will believe it when I see it.
Our two hospitals in Will County have made it very clear they're not interested.
Thank you for your testimony.
Representative Kozo with a question.
Mr. Glasgow's office said that there were two hospitals that within Will County that had limited beds. Can you tell me which hospitals those are, and approximately how many beds are in those?
Both Silver Cross Hospital and St. Joe's Hospital are private within Will County that do have psychiatric units. Bolingbrook is also a hospital within Will County but does not have a psychiatric unit. As far as the number of beds, I will defer to Mr. Troiani.
I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but they're very limited. The actual beds is very different than the licensed number of beds. One of the things that the hospital's also made very clear, they're not really in a position to accept the level of acuity that often comes with the consumers that we work with.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from members of the commission? Seeing none, thank you very much. If you could furnish us with your written testimony, we appreciate it. It'll be posted on the website, and the members will have a chance to review it as well. We'll move to agenda item number 4. We'll hear now from Mr. Henry Baer, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 31, Mr. Henry Feltz, on behalf of the Illinois Nurses Association. Welcome once again.
Yeah, this is the last hurrah, I guess.
For this round. There could be more.
But I do want to. My name is Henry Baer.
Network continues this series for another season.
My name is Henry Baer. I'm the executive director of AFSCME Council 31, which is the collective bargaining representative for the employees at Tinley Park Mental Health Center. I want to thank the committee once again for the opportunity to testify before you, and also I want to congratulate the committee on your perfect score. You voted on 4 plans, you voted against the closure of all 4 facilities, and I think what you've heard today, the testimony you've heard from the department today, certainly should convince you that there should be a fifth plan that should be rejected by this commission, because in fact there is no plan. It would appear to me as though the department's approach to planning is kind of like my personal planning for weight control. You say, you know, you can eat and then you can exercise, and I do fine on the first part, I eat, but then when it comes to the exercise, I fall short. They have a plan to close the facility. Now, the plan was, yeah, you can close the facility when there are replacement beds, but you've heard testimony from any number of people here today that there is no place for the people who currently receive treatment at Tinley to go. There's 2 issues. One is capacity, and there's limited capacity. And the second, even those places which might have capacity don't want people who are uninsured or whose insurance has run out. They want to make money. This is a safety net hospital which must remain open. I remember the arguments when it was a question of whether or not to build Stroger Hospital, and people said, well, there are plenty of other hospital beds in Cook County. Absolutely true, but those beds were not open to the people who didn't have insurance or whose insurance had run out. That is the case here as well. There is a need for these beds. You heard from the department itself that the facility was operating at capacity. One wonders why, when we hear stories of people waiting in waiting rooms, why the census is down, when in fact there are beds available at Tinley Park, and you have to ask the department whether or not they're deliberately deflecting people from coming here. I don't know if that's what's going on, but it would certainly appear that that may be what's going on, and I think that it would be a travesty to turn our backs on those people. What we need here is a supplemental appropriation to keep the facility open through the rest of this fiscal year. That's the one thing that I heard the department say that I would agree with, that there's not sufficient funds in the budget that was enacted by the General Assembly to keep the place open. And you're going to be back in Springfield next week, and you'll have an opportunity when back there to appropriate sufficient funds to keep this facility, which is vitally needed, open. It's important not only for the people who receive treatment there, it's also important, as you've heard testimony, to our criminal justice system, to keep people who shouldn't be in the... I'll wrap up. We shouldn't be in the criminal justice system getting mental health services. You can all do that. You can do that by first rejecting this plan, and then secondly by supporting appropriations to keep the place open. Thank you.
Ms. Chairman,
my name is Henry.
Yes, I'm sorry, Chairman, if I could, I just want to comment to Mr. Baer. That's the shortest you've been in the last 7 weeks. Thank
well,
you
I know I had a tough timekeeper here.
Thank you very much, sir.
I didn't want to cross swords with you, Senator.
We'll let Representative Nekritz know that you were more responsive to Senator Trotter.
Well, she trained me. See, she trained me, so he had made his job easier.
Nice try. Okay, please proceed.
Yes, my name is Henry Feltz. I'm a registered nurse. I work for the Illinois Nurses Association. I represent the nurses at Tenley Park. I also am a former state employee with 7 years experience in mental health, working at Chester Mental Health Center as an RN. We are against you closing this facility. The effects we will have on the residents would be that they're going to be homeless. Most mental health facilities don't understand, or community-based facilities don't understand. Once they leave the facility, they do not seek community services. We send them out into the community with a script, a location for them to go, but half of them never show up. Most of them become homeless. These are the people you see and I see every day, pushing the cart with all their belongings in the cart. You'll see them under bridges, living in, you know, cardboard boxes. You'll see them walking, talking to themselves. They don't seek help because of the fact that they don't think they're mentally ill. They end up going back to the emergency rooms. They get picked up by the health. They basically get picked up by the police. They're sent to jail. And then, guess what? They're transferred to places like Chester Mental Health, Alton, because they're found fit to stand trial. And they're back in the system. That doesn't work here. The other thing I want to say is, finally, is the fact that DHS, since they sold HAL, or closed HAL, has hamstrung Tenley Park from ever growing. They never kept up their facilities. You've been to the parking lot. They never did any improvements to their facilities to upgrade it so it could be certified.
Please bring your remarks to a close.
So, you know, if DHS was so committed to their health care facilities and their patients, they would have upgraded Tenley Park and kept it open. And basically, in their mind, in 2009, they were already going to close it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, members of the commission? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next panel, we're on agenda item number 5. We'll ask the following individuals to come forward. We'll do this in two groups. So, Marianne Bithos, with NAMI of South Suburbs of Chicago, Barbara Pasquinelli on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Palos Oyland Area, Christopher Skane with the Mental Health Summit, Mark Harriman with the Mental Health Summit, and Melissa Picciola with Equip for Equality. If you could all come forward. The next panel will consist of Laura Thomas, Nancy Jones, Linda Delaforge, and Marty Jurasek. Whenever you're ready, please proceed.
Thank you. Hello? This is the first time I've ever done this.
All right, so if you could bring the mic a little closer.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Hello, my name is Mary Ann Beethus, and I am the president of the local NAMI chapter here, NAMI South Suburbs of Chicago. NAMI opposes the closing of Tinley Park Mental Health Center, and the reason for me is personal. In 2002, my daughter Lisa became very ill with no insurance, and we had no other option but to have her admitted to Tinley Park. It was the worst day of my life and very traumatic for my daughter, but I truly believe that had my daughter been denied treatment because she had no insurance, I would not be here today to tell everyone the positive outcome from that one hospitalization. I can happily tell you she continues to receive treatment and is now a senior at St. Xavier's College. There are many families struggling with loved ones who are suffering from mental illness, and many of them are living without treatment because they do not have insurance. When mental illness goes untreated, it will tear a family apart. With the closing of Tinley Park Singer and the loss of civil acute care beds in Elgin and McFarland, thousands of people will now have nowhere to send their loved ones for help that any human being should be able to get. Unfortunately, our community mental health providers have seen their budgets drastically cut and can no longer provide the level of care an unfunded mental health patient needs simply because they no longer have the funds for their programs. This leaves the sick person in a cycle of visits in and out of the hospital. Now, with the loss of beds in the south suburbs, our loved ones will be waiting in emergency rooms throughout the area for a bed in Madden. We know that Madden is full capacity already with only 150 beds, and we have been told by DMH that there are no plans to provide additional funds or beds to Madden. With the wait in an ER for transfer to state hospitals already days in some hospitals. It is the government's responsibility to provide a safety net for its most vulnerable citizens. This population is without doubt the most vulnerable in our state. The Cook County Jail already has the largest provider of mental health treatment in the state. Many of the people at these state hospitals provide treatment who will wind up in our jails. So the government is going to have to pay for treatment one way or the other, either in the jails or in the community. The only right thing to do is to take care of our family members and neighbors before they wind up in jail or become homeless. No one deserves to be neglected. My daughter's story is one of success through the treatment she received in her community. Even though she did not have insurance, she was able to reclaim her life and determine her own future. Everyone deserves the same chance that just won't happen if you close this hospital. This is my daughter's self-portrait. And on here she has, "I'm not alone." And all these little balloons there are people's names of people that have mental illness. Abraham Lincoln, Winston Churchill, Linda Hamilton, so forth and so on. There is hope. And if they can get the treatment, they can go on with their lives. They can be citizens that can take care of themselves. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Christopher Skeen. I'm with the Mental Health Summit, and I'm here to say that we oppose closing Tinley Park unless you have a plan that allows you to deal with all of the people who are going to be affected by this. It's going to negatively affect people on the south side of Chicago. You're basically saying to these people without insurance that they won't be able to get mental health services. They're going to wind up going to Madden and not being able to get in. You're telling the families on the south side of Chicago and the people on the south side of Chicago, hey, this is your problem, deal with it alone, even though these people are not capable of handling or trained to handle these severe mental illnesses. This is also going to impact people on the north side of Chicago, all over the region, because you're decreasing the total number of beds. Last year, Tinley Park served 1,789 unique patients. That's 17% of the total number of unique patients served by the state-run hospital system. Psych hospital system. This is a really, really big deal, and you're telling a lot of people that they're just out of luck. It's not morally right, and it's not fiscally right. When you're telling these people to go out on their own, you're going to be putting them back out on the street. You're going to be telling them, you know, putting them in positions where they'll be sucked into the criminal justice system. They'll be taking advantage of homelessness services. You're going to wind up paying for this one way or another. These people need help, and this is the best way to help them. I also want to point out that on an individual level, these are people who We're not talking about a broken bone here. We're not talking about, you know, ouch, something hurts. These are people who are a lot of times incapable of caring for themselves. They're not able to tell right from wrong. They don't know what's real and what's not. And you're telling them, go live life on your own. This is way worse than saying, hey, we're not going to set your broken bone. This is telling people that they're going to live their lives without any hope or prayer of being helped. And you're telling families to take care of them. These people are not trained to take care of people with mental illnesses. And you're telling the community to, you know, watch out, and you have to deal with these people.
Mark. Again, Mark Hierman, also from the Mental Health Summit. I just want to make one point, and that is with regard to the Affordable Care Act. The likelihood that we might have an Affordable Care Act still in place, if it's not declared unconstitutional, if it's not repealed, several years from now, is an argument for not closing Tinley Park. Let's wait and see if we have an Affordable Care Act. Let's wait and see if it serves all of the uninsured people in Illinois. Let's wait and see if those people actually get treatment in our state in our private psychiatric hospitals or under the new Medicaid system that will take effect if that act is not declared unconstitutional and not otherwise repealed. And if all of that happens, that's the time in which we can start planning to close Tinley Park. But what are we supposed to do between now and then? Just hope that people don't die? That's not good planning. So the best argument for keeping this hospital open is that we hope the Affordable Care Act will rescue Illinois' mental health system 2 or 3 years down the road. And if that happens, then we can start talking about revitalizing the mental health system or changing the mental health system in a different way.
This is a very high-powered group at this table. Step back a little bit. You know, I don't have the facts and figures that they do. My name is Barbara Pasquinelli, and I'm president of the League of Women Voters of the Pelus-Orland area. And the League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan political organization which does not support candidates or oppose candidates, but takes issues that are important in the community, studies them to death, usually for 2 years, and then reaches a consensus. And we did this. We started back in 2005 when all of the rumors started, worked through 2006, had public meetings which involved people from the state, from the county. I think Senator Crotty was at one of them. We talked to a lady in the group who was also there. We had police people in, a lot of police people that we've talked to say this is where our mentally ill people come to. And for a lot of times, they stay there for quite a while. But I'm here to appeal for the keep the Tinley Park Mental Health Center open. Not forever, but certainly long enough to come up with a viable plan for the facility and for the people there. So our consensus says, before closing this, we need to strengthen community services like Grand Prairie and Metropolitan Services Southwest and provide adequate funding for them. They're going to be the first line. Provide private hospital systems with increasing reimbursement because they're not going to take them. Whatever negotiations are happening now, we talked to all of them a few years ago, and they were not positive in any way. Make sure that any revenues from the sale of Tinley Park land stay in the mental health budget. I think that's critical. And times are not good, but that's a great, great location. Have alternative services in place before the facility is closed, not during, not after, but before, and those are in capital letters. Provide a system for dispensing the important medications for the improved health of the patients. Make sure discharge patients receive follow-up care and provide a safety net for those people who fall through the cracks so the job doesn't fall to local police departments. What we hear is a lack of a plan, and everybody's spoken to that. So until there is a plan, a reasonable plan is formulated,
You have to keep operating because mentally ill people should not be in jails, in waiting rooms of hospitals, or homeless. Budget cuts is an excuse. Oh, this is my big finish. This is it.
Cue up the orchestra. This is the big finish. But your time has expired.
Well, no, Barbara. Budget cuts is an excuse, not a plan.
There you go.
Good finish.
Good finish.
Equip for Equality appreciates the opportunity to testify this evening. Equip for Equality believes that people with mental illness are best served in the community, and we have long advocated for the state to strengthen and adequately fund the community mental health system so that quality services are readily available and easily accessed. However, the reality is that the community system has been severely underfunded for decades. The proposal to close Tinley does not contemplate any additional funds for community providers while relinquishing responsibility for Tinley residents and acute care patients to the already underfunded system. In deciding whether, when, and how to close Tinley, the primary consideration must be the needs of individuals with mental illness. Other considerations, such as preserving jobs, should not drive this important decision. Closure must only occur as part of a comprehensive plan to provide for the needs of the facility's residents and acute care patients, including those who are uninsured or not eligible for Medicaid. The closure of Tinley without a corresponding funding increase and expansion of capacity in the community will likely result in people with mental illness being diverted to the criminal justice system, becoming homeless, or even dying. Without an alternative safety net, closing Tinley now will put the health and safety of individuals with mental illness at risk and is therefore premature. Equip for Equality stands ready to work with the state to develop a meaningful and effective plan so that individuals with mental illness can receive quality care in the community and access acute psychiatric care when needed. The closure of Tinley at this time without such a plan, however, is unwise and unsafe. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, members of the commission? Thank you very much. We'll next hear from Laura Thomas with NAMI Illinois, Nancy Jones with NAMI, Linda Della Forge, and Marty Jurasek. If you all come forward, please. If you have written testimony, please furnish it up front. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Laura Thomas, and I'm the executive director of NAMI Illinois. NAMI has 40 affiliates throughout Illinois, and so we have been visible and active, I think, in all of your hearings. NAMI Illinois submitted testimony at Singer at the Rockford hearing, and so we hope that you'll go back and review that one more time. But there are a couple of other points that I'd really like to make. Our parent organization, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, released a report in March 2011, and I'm going to submit it so you can look at it for review because I think they were talking to Illinois. At the time, Illinois was eighth in cuts to mental health systems. They had several policy recommendations in place. One was to protect state mental health funding and restore budget cuts, but tie funding to performance. Second one is that the key here, I think, maintain adequate numbers of inpatient beds for psychiatric treatments. They recognize that it's all too easy sometimes to have a large cut when you're cutting the extreme costly services. So that was number two. Number three was invest in research, early detection, and early intervention in the treatment of serious mental illnesses in order to avoid those long-term costs. And number four, implement mental health screening and assessment programs, again, as an early intervention mechanism. There's another report due out by NAMI on November 10th. So I've asked for policy recommendations that are going to be published at that time. They're still in process. I hope to have a draft next week for you. The one thing that they did tell me was that Illinois is now number one in actual budget cuts. And I think it shows in the continuum of care, the fact that we have and are relying all too much right now on those heavy crisis services and we're simply shifting. We have people who are in state hospitals because they didn't have access to community care. We have people who are in jails and prisons because they didn't have access to community care. It's time to reverse that trend. One of the striking appendix pieces in the March 2011 report was the fact that Illinois served far fewer individuals in the community, and we had a far higher percentage and number of individuals in hospitals, in state-operated hospitals. I think there's a correlation there, and I think we can do better than that. Thank you.
Hello. I'm Nancy Jones. I'm not anybody really important. I'm just a parent of a seriously... of a seriously mentally ill 42-year-old son who, as of this morning, was put out on the street as homeless. 2 years ago, we took on the naive idea of bringing him back here and trying to get him mental health services in our great state of Illinois to help him get his life back together. Well, it hasn't turned out too well. It took us 2 years to get SSI and Medicaid, so he wasn't eligible for any services until then. And last November, we had to finally, somebody helped me sign a forced commitment, and he was at Tinley, which did help him a lot. I can praise Tinley for the excellent people there. They were wonderful. He was there 10 days. But, of course, he was released to us at home, and he became non-compliant because it's part of his disease. He's schizoaffective, and he doesn't think he's sick. Well, he's gotten worse. I called 911 about a month ago, and three big cops showed up, and they wouldn't do anything, our great Shorewood Police Department. They said he didn't commit a crime. So at 2 o'clock in the morning, they left us to this raving maniac. And at this point, my husband and I are afraid of him. I mean, he's dangerous, I believe. He's delusional, and he's acting out his delusions and his psychotic. The doctor from Will County told us that. Well, in the process, now we finally got an involuntary commitment, and he was taken to Silver Cross Hospital. They immediately told him he had rights. And so he signed the involuntary, knowing he could get out in 72 hours. Well, he is out on the street, and I refuse to have him come back to our home because my husband and I are just don't feel safe anymore until he has the proper treatment. Well, now he's without any care. He's out on the street. I don't know where now. I just beg of you, you know, we need more long-term care for these patients than what they're getting now. There's nothing. There's nothing for them. And we're just in agony right now because we love him and we want to help him, and there's no help. Nobody cares in this state. It's just, you know, heartbreaking for us. And that's all I have to say. Please keep Tinley open because it is excellent. The building doesn't look so great, but believe me, they do have very professional people there that really care and are trying to help. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Linda Delaforg. I'm co-director of Citizen Action Illinois, which is a statewide public interest organization. We have a long history of advocating for quality, affordable health care for all people in Illinois, as well as for patient safety. Most recently, we've been at the forefront of the controversy surrounding the Oak Forest hospital closing by Cook County government. Through our community efforts and working directly with the people who utilize health care in the Metro South area, we certainly have witnessed the gradual destruction of the public health care safety net in an area which is one of the poorest in our nation and our country. This is an area where study after study shows that Southland health statistics are more comparable to a developing country than the United States of America. Diabetes, heart disease, infant mortality, cancer, and violence statistics are at the top of the charts in this particular area. Experts estimate that over the past decade, over 2,000 hospital beds alone have been lost in this area. With the downsizing of patient services at Provident, Oak Forest Hospital, the closure of Howe, and now the proposed closure of Tinley Park, this area is well on its way to becoming a virtual healthcare desert. Testimony that we're hearing today is eerily similar to what we have heard over the last year surrounding the controversial closing of Tinley Park, Oak Forest. And I just want to say that we witnessed firsthand the transferring of patients who tried to get into an emergency room but were turned away when Oak Forest was closing. Those patients are not going to local hospitals. The majority of those patients are being sent all the way to Stroger in Chicago if they need physical care. If they need mental health care, they're being sent to Tinley Park. If we close Tinley Park, we're going to see the same effect that we're seeing with those people that are going to Stroger. They have no family to support them. They can't get back and forth. They're traveling miles and miles. They cannot get support in their own local community. Citizen Action vehemently opposes the closing of Tinley Park. We respectfully request that CAFA reject the closure proposal made by DHS. We call on our state lawmakers to fully fund this facility. And I also want to call on our state lawmakers today to support health exchange implementation in Illinois. Senate Bill 1313, House Amendment 2, will come up, we hope, for a vote in the Insurance Committee of the House next week. It does not enjoy bipartisan support.
Can we keep the focus to this facility?
But we will need, if we are going to provide for people, we will need to implement health care in Illinois, and that's one step toward doing it.
Thank you. Are there any questions, members of the commission? Representative Bellick.
Thank you very much. I wanted to ask the lady from NAMI, and the statistics that you had, that we were number eight. What were we, number eight, the worst, and now we've gone to number one?
Budget cuts to mental health services.
Oh, cuts to mental health. So across the United States,
correct,
we have the most cuts to mental health services. And were we still given a rating of F? I know a couple of years ago I thought we had improved a little bit, but I wasn't sure.
That was a grading the states report. This is simply a budget report that's coming out that recognizes that states are in financial and fiscal crisis and that there are disproportionate cuts coming to mental health services.
And that's a federal study?
Yes, it is.
By NAMI? Federal?
National.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Maybe I wasn't in order. I'm sorry.
Marty,
please
forgive me.
Yeah, I forgive you. I saw you on Channel 11 last night.
How did I do?
You did look up, huh?
Did I sound like I knew what I was talking about?
Yeah, you did.
Thanks. Take as much time as you want.
No, I'll promise to take 2 minutes.
I'm Marty Jurasek. I'm going to say I'm here to do my wife proud. She's a former patient at Tinley Park. She's doing really well now. I am not taking a stance for and against the closing of Tinley Park. I think the most important thing I would have to say is that I wish I could have heard from a current patient at Tinley Park at this hearing. I think that's the most important thing. I don't know if any patients are here, but I think that's the most important person that we could have heard from in the hearing, besides their family members. What I would like to advocate for is more peer-run services. That would mean services are run by people in recovery from mental illness. I would like to advocate for more respite programs to help people in the community. I just want to say in closing that I'm also on the board of some of the city mental health centers in the city of Chicago where there is a proposal to close half the city-run mental health centers. That's another battle. Well, that's the battle that I am fighting right now. But thank you for listening to me, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions, members of the commission? Thank you for your participation this evening.
Thank you.
Agenda item number 6, is we've already heard from Joseph Troiani. So we'll now hear from Joe Moser on behalf of Ingalls Health System, Pete McLennan.
Got it.
Executive Director of Stepping Stones, and Michael Engelhardt, the President of South Suburban Hospital. Whenever you're ready, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Pete McLennan. I'm the Executive Director of Stepping Stones. I'm sorry. Pete McLennan, Executive Director of Stepping Stones, and we're located in Joliet, primarily serving Will and Grundy County, providing substance use disorder services. So I wanted to be here to testify today because I know there's discussion about the possible role of substance use disorder treatment providers as a solution to the proposed closing of Tinley Park. And I really appreciate your leadership and your dedication to good public policy here in Illinois. Why else would you be here? So for me, it's an opportunity to talk about my opposition to this proposal without adhering to the previously developed plans to transfer those facilities responsibly in some fashion, whether that's a state-of-the-art facility that's been referred to before or transferring those to other community-based providers. So when we talk about transferring services to the substance use treatment providers as an option here, you know, we already are serving almost 49% of our patients with a mental health diagnosis as well. So it's not like we're not willing or interested or dedicated to this, but the limitations that I want you to know about are the following. And that is that we're currently operating at capacity. We have long waiting lists right now. It can take people easily from 3 to 9 weeks to get into treatment with our facility. So it's not like we have open beds, open capacity, that we're just hoping somebody will send somebody to us. The other is that as a licensed substance use treatment provider, the people that we treat have to have a primary diagnosis of a substance use disorder. So not just anybody can come there, be treated, and be reimbursed for their care. The other is that on a licensure capacity as well, we're limited to providing services to people on a non-locked basis. We cannot lock our doors, lock people in. So that limits us to treating people who are not a danger to themselves or others, people who are psychiatrically stable. So I wanted the commissioners to know that while substance use treatment providers are probably already universally providing services to people with a dual diagnosis, we have very clear limitations due to licensure standards. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. My name is Joe Moser. I'm Vice President of Ingalls Memorial Hospital. Ingalls is opposed to the closing of the Tinley Park Mental Health Facility. We agreed to the closing back in 2008 when there was a replacement hospital proposed. Since that's been pulled off the table, I think the main point, and I have written statements I want to submit, I never get through them in 2 minutes, but when the replacement hospital was approved, it was because that would provide the capacity. There's no capacity now. We hear from the state that, oh, there are hospitals that'll have room for them. Capacity, we face the same things they face. We don't have enough physicians to staff the beds to treat all these patients. The staffed beds, a lot of times, is well below what we have been licensed for. And also, a lot of times, we're facing a full census. We have just so many beds split between geropsych, adolescent psych, and general psych beds. So far, we don't really have a plan from the state. They have called and said, we're closing and we need you to take capacity, but there's been no formal plan put forward as to how we're supposed to handle these patients. There's chips cutting happened years ago. There's no formal plan on we're even going to offer you funding. I heard about an appropriation, but I don't know that how I'm to rely on that appropriation, whatever occur. Right now, as you know, we're well behind in bills, and we're operating at a loss that we're not allowed to count towards charity care, but just keep on doing this and serving these patients, which is our mission and we will continue to do. I think right now what we would like to do is you know, urge you to keep this facility open until there is a good plan in place to help serve these patients and to work with the local community providers and let us help develop that plan.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Engelhart. I am the president of Advocate South Suburban Hospital. I have submitted my written testimony, but I would like to comment on some of the excellent points that have been made throughout the day. First, these are tough times for our state, and while our state has articulated the budget deficit issues and concerns, what I think they failed to articulate is the overall cost of this closure. They looked at just the simple shutting down and closing a gap in the budget. They didn't factor in all of the impact it's going to have on the community. Some can be articulated and counted with a calculator, and others are soft costs that we won't truly appreciate for years to come. So I think ultimately that might be short-sighted. Number two, there's been a plan that supposedly has been discussed and articulated, and in the testimony they talk about how they're mandated by 2014 to have a strategic plan for mental health. I find it ironic that we would be shutting down the Tinley Park facility when, in fact, there is not a comprehensive plan. The state has articulated that they have spoken to and have some level of commitment from five hospitals. We have not been spoken to. We do not have psych beds. The last point I would make is this past weekend, we had six psych patients that were in our hospital. We do not have the capabilities to take care of these patients. The shortest stay was 48 hours. The longest was 4 days. Our concern is this. These patients need help. We are, of course, going to do the best we can. But if at that same time a stroke patient walked in, two heart attack patients walked in, and our resources were stretched too thin, could we ultimately do the job our mission calls us to do as far as providing care? I don't think it would. So I think Senator Crotty, Representative Riley have articulated well the concern that we have kicked this can down the street. There is really no plan. The last point I would make is while the shutting down of Oak Forest was disappointing and potentially harmful to the community, at least under the CON provisions, Cook County had to come forward at least two times to articulate a plan. I'm not hearing that plan. And last point that I would make is that if, in fact, Reed is converted to an outpatient center, there is no way that the current 1,800 admissions that take place at Tinley Park, and then throw on top the Chicago Reed census, we're going to be in a very desperate situation at the hospitals and will not be able to provide optimal care and will not be doing any justice to our communities. Those are my words.
I actually have a question for the two representatives of the hospitals. So one has, you have at Ingalls, you have psych beds?
Yes, we have inpatient psych for adolescent, for geropsych, and for what we would just call regular psych patient.
And do you have the physical capacity, if the funding were to accompany it, to convert additional beds to psych?
At this point, no, because they're licensed in one building, so we keep them, that general population, all in one location. And in our main hospital where we have our med-surg beds, we have no capacity there.
Okay. So, do you have the physical capacity to convert to inpatient psych beds?
No. In fact, what will happen in December is we will be opening up a pediatric unit. We feel that is where we can best serve the community. That's an area where many hospitals struggle, but it's something that we're committed to providing. So we have shored up the excess capacity by opening up a pediatric unit that's due to open in December. No, we do not have capacity.
Representative McCarthy.
Thank you. Mr. Engelhart, you mentioned that you had one patient that stayed 48 hours, one stayed 4 days. Where did they go when they left you?
I believe at least half of these were six patients, by the way.
Six, okay.
The shortest stay was just 48 hours. The longest was 4 days. The combination of Tinley.
In those stays, you consider them inpatient stays, not like waiting in the waiting room or the emergency room?
No, we have them in the emergency room
with usually an additional dedicated nurse and a sitter so that they do not cause harm to themselves and to anyone else. And Representative McCarthy,
that's true on the 48 hours or the four-day ones?
Yeah, it's around-the-clock coverage. We're doubling up. And remember, we don't have the capabilities. All we're doing is triaging and trying to calm the patient down. We are not advancing the care for this patient. We truly are not. We don't have the capabilities nor the skill set to be providing that type of service.
Mr. McLennan, I could have asked people from various panels before this, so, but if it was possible for us to go back there and pass an appropriation of $9.7 million, which would equal this year's appropriation, equal last year's appropriation, would take the 10.7 and the 9.7, would you think all of it should go into the state-operated facility, or would some of that go into a community facility?
This is regarding the Tinley Park Mental Health Center.
Right.
For me, Representative, I've limited my expertise to the substance use disorder treatment field, so I'm hesitant to comment on how best funds would be used to serve the mentally ill.
And I don't mean to use a guinea
pig,
but many of the groups that testified here have testified at various hearings over the years about the need for more community-based. And,
absolutely.
They were the complete opposite of some of the testimony today. So.
Right. I mean, we certainly believe and support that the concept that the community-based system, if adequately funded, can really do a fine job meeting the needs of patients regardless of their diagnosis in general. But again, there are very specific admission criteria that are established, and the facilities and licensure codes that are developed over time and years match that to make sure that people are safely and adequately treated. And there really is no if people need the kind of 24-hour monitoring in facilities that are locked and supervised 24 hours a day, that are suicide-proofed, and all those kinds of things, nothing short than providing that level of care is going to be adequate.
And I think you'd agree with me that the statement was made earlier that made it sound like everybody who leaves the Tinley Park Mental Health Center never makes it to community-based. And I think that is just a flat-out misrepresentation that we have had problems, and there are people that kind of fall into the cracks, but there's
right.
a lot of good work done at Tinley Park
right.
as far as making sure those people are followed up.
Absolutely.
Get the services
and
the community.
And in our case, 12 people that we served last year were former Tinley Park mental health patients.
Thank you for pointing
that
out. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm going to call on Co-Chair Bellick for some follow-up questions and then relinquish the chair to her as well after that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your testimony. This is why these hearings are so crucial to a lot of us who are not professionals in the field, and I think something that you hit on, one, parity of mental health, that's extremely important when you talked about if mental health patients came in, but then if a stroke patient came in, that we want parity for those people too. And I understand your problem, but I'm wondering what, and maybe somebody asked this question, what is the percentage of beds in your hospitals that are for mental illness? I know you described three different types, but what percentage, or how many beds do you have in your hospital that are for mental health?
48? Yes.
Okay. And how many beds do you have total?
Licensed for 545.
Okay. And what do you have in yours?
We're licensed for 289, and we have no psych beds.
Oh, you have no psych beds?
No.
Okay. Well, I think the resounding thing that we have heard over and over again in our other hearings too regarding corrections and DD facilities was no plan in place. Now, the agencies testified that they have a plan, but after hearing your testimony, especially about Reed, that a lot of us, I don't think, are that familiar with, taking that out of the system for, is it the acute psychiatric beds? Inpatient?
The testimony that I heard earlier presented to you
right.
that was new to us, both Ingalls and South Suburban, was that potentially Reed would convert to an outpatient setting. If in fact that occurs, you've just shrunk down the size even further of your ability to take care of these acute patients. Regardless, we're opposed to this, but
right.
that only makes the situation far worse and accelerates the problem.
Well, that's very important to those of us that are sitting here, I think.
I heard the testimony, so I'm going off of that. That's alarming to us. If that is in fact true, that's very concerning.
Mm-hmm. And I just had one other question from Mr. Engelhardt from, Stepping Stones. Peter, And yes, I should know you because you've been in the Capitol a lot lately.
Good to see you.
Are your patients Medicaid?
Many of them are. And we have, of our seven programs, three of them are Medicaid reimbursable. Many of the programs, the longer-term residential, are not Medicaid reimbursable. So, again, we really rely on DHS, Division of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse funding. And, again, I would echo what others have said. We really need a special appropriation. Our funding was cut about 15%. Some of my colleagues, their funding was cut well over 20%.
Right.
That's just this year. Over the last 4 years, it's been cut 31% of our DHS funding. But again, we do serve Medicaid eligible people, and that is a help. We do get the federal match through our services. That is a help. And so some of our services are Medicaid reimbursable. Many of them are not.
And Mr. Moser, were your 48 beds, I think you said, are those Medicaid match, any of those beds? Can Medicaid people use your psychiatric beds? Okay.
Yes.
All right, great. Thank you. Are there any other questions from any other committee members? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think Senator Crotty. Do you have a question?
No, I think I just wanted to
make sure
that I'm clear on something that Representative McCarthy mentioned when we talk about funding and all the different structures that we have, whether it be community providers, in this case, the hospitals, and certainly the state. I am a firm believer in working with persons with disabilities that we need to make sure that we're treating every person to their illness. And I don't think there's a blanket time where, or there isn't a broad brush that we can paint somebody. There are going to be times where they're going to have that acute care. And that's where I feel very strongly Tinley Park Mental Health is the place for them. But then there's a time where there's, once they're cared for, that they should be in the community. But not until that time, so that they're not in jails or homeless, as so many have stated, because we have so many persons, and that's why they're mentally ill and they're homeless. So I think that's what I want to make sure everybody understands. I'm not all for just a state facilities. I think I'm for the person and to be placed where they are at that time in their lives.
Thank you very much, Senator Crotty. Thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it. Moving on to agenda item number 7, employees. We have Sharon Ostrowski, Barbara Foster, Dr. Richard Bongard, Michelle Hubbard, please. Again, I'd like to remind you to please limit your testimony to the 2 minutes so that everybody gets a chance to speak. Thank you. Please. Oh, there's two more coming up. Please proceed. Anyone, just state your name and give it.
Okay. Good evening, members of the commission. My name is Barbara Foster, and I am the president of AFSCME Local 1591 at the Tinley Park Mental Health Center. I am also an activity therapist at the center. I have with me today two longtime employees at the Tinley Park Mental Health Center. I guess Dr. Bongard, who is one of our psychiatrists, is not here. He had to step away. But I have Michelle Hubbard, who is a social worker. And I have Tiffany Sorcerer, who is currently a social worker intern, who is also a family member of an individual with mental illness who we helped some years ago. They have information about the center, how we do it, and why we do it. But before I hand it over to them, I'd like to tell you a story. This story came from one of our patients who was discharged yesterday. He was unable to come because he was in the hospital for 9 days, and he had to return to work today. On October 19th, I made an attempt to take my life after being in a clinical depression state. I was taken to a local hospital, left locked in a room for 2.5 days, untreated, until a bed was made available for me on October 21st. I have never been hospitalized before. When I arrived, I was warmly greeted by the intake staff. My 9-day stay involved classes on stress management, the importance of my medications, coping skills, nutrition, spirituality, and how to manage my illness. And most of all, that my life was worth living. Each staff member showed a personal interest in my recovery and gave myself and other patients the support, respect, and sympathy to recover. Mine is one story of hundreds of people that have been patients at Tinley Park, and every patient has their own story of how they suffer from mental illness and were able to recover due to a facility like this. Tomorrow is October 31st, and will be my last day at Tinley Park. I now feel I have the skills, education, medication to manage my illness. But what about the others who suffer from depression, bipolar illness, schizophrenia, or many other illnesses? Are they to suffer or become homeless? Should they be denied medications? Should they be denied the care I have received at Tinley Park? If you can't answer these questions, you must keep this facility open to help people in need. There is no other choice. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Sharon Ostrowski. I'm an RN at Tinley Park Mental Health Center also. I was relocated there when my other state hospital, which was the only research hospital in the state, closed some years ago. At present, the state seems to be decreasing number of patients at Tinley, and as of last week, it was like about 48. I'm on a medical leave right now, but I understand that they also have a waiting list of 10 to 20 patients for when we do discharge. So something is not right with that picture. Plus, these are patients that are also tax-paying voters, and the state does not seem to be having any real concern for the clients and regular community citizens who are tax-paying voters. We need a hospital in the Southland area that is a public facility to take off the slack for these other places that cannot have them. And once we have that facility, we can then update it. If the land, as I keep hearing also, is wanted for commercialization, well, like was said earlier, let them sell off the land. Let us have a building somewhere else in the area. Do not deprive people in this area, which is a large area, as they have already said, from Kankakee, Will County, Grundy County, South Side Chicago, South Suburb. It's a large area. The other thing, too, is that our patients are not just from our area. A lot of times when Chicago Reed Mental Health Center and Madden beds are full, we wind up getting them from their hospitals. So a lot of Northside hospitals, you need to look back in the last year or so, that our patients come from places like Swedish Covenant. They come from Resurrection Hospitals, from Evanston, and I remember one patient I had came from Lutheran General. Like I said, we need to not have the system like have more homeless, crime. There's going to be alcohol and drug use when they are not able to get the meds because they will self-medicate and being treated in the already overcrowded jails. And as you have heard from the families, that We need to continue with community education of mental health and let them know that there is a resource they can go when you don't have a lot of funds. I have sent one a personal and one a general email to your place, and I hope you will pay attention to some of the issues in there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Moving on. Did you have testimony? Yeah. Please state your name and proceed. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Tiffany Saucier. I'm a social work intern at Tinley Park Mental Health Center. I am currently pursuing my master's in social work with a concentration in mental health, and I'm serving my second year internship at Tinley Park. I think I speak for myself and as well as the other social work and psychiatry interns who are at Tinley. We find the real life job experience provided there very invaluable. I would say Tinley is unique because the staff that mentors us, they have a wealth of experience. And what we learn on the job, we can never learn in a classroom. On a more personal note, I really wanted to intern at Tinley Park because I've had a very positive experience with my uncle, who was a patient at Tinley about 10 years ago. My uncle is a person who's living with schizophrenia, and he has at times had problems with being compliant on his medication. And I can remember seeing him in the very throes of psychosis, very much so in crisis. And, you know, when he needed help, he went to Tinley. And when he came back, he was stable. And he was my uncle again, someone who I could approach and I was not scared of. I was not uncomfortable to be around. I would say I would want to contrast that positive experience with another difficult time that he experienced. When he was off of his medication and he was unable to get timely treatment, he hurt his neighbor and he went to prison for about 8 years and missed a significant portion of my life. And I feel in my heart that episode could have been prevented if he had gotten the care that he needed. And if Tinley Park closes, there will be, you know, scores of people like my uncle who would not get the treatment when they need it. And, you know, I feel like that is the reason why we need to keep this place open. In closing,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Michelle Hubbard. I'm a social worker at Tinley Park Mental Health Center. I know you've heard how people get to Tinley Park through the emergency rooms, and since the closing of one unit, they've been waiting for days, literally, in the emergency rooms to get into Tinley Park. One way that we differ is when a patient comes into Tinley Park, although we have 72 hours, usually within the first 24 hours, they have received a comprehensive psychiatric evaluation with the psychiatrist. They have met with the social worker for a one-on-one psychosocial assessment. They have been started on medication. At times, they've been referred for one-on-one counseling with psychology. Also, we start planning for discharge the day they come in. One of the questions that we usually ask is, do you know where you're going when you're discharged? So that we would know what resources we need to link them with when they leave. Now, a lot of things like community agencies, when they leave there, we get them linked, and usually they have an appointment within a week or so. Out on the street, without coming through Tinley Park, there are months before they can get an appointment with a community mental agency. And the importance of that community mental health agency is so that they can continue to get their meds, so they can have someone that they can function in the least restrictive environment. And although I've heard earlier that most don't go, I differ with that opinion because I've had quite a few patients that have done very well in the community for years due to linkage with community mental health agencies that would not be available had they not come through Tinley Park. Also, with the substance abuse clients, we do have a good working relationship with quite a few of the substance abuse residential treatment programs. And when the patients come through us, we're able to assist them with the assessment process for them to get in for residential substance abuse treatment. And usually they will go directly from our facility to the substance abuse treatment facility. But they want them stabilized first, which we're able to do at Tinley Park Mental Health Center. Because lots of times they come in, they have been using drugs, they may have a primary diagnosis of substance use, but it has led to depression, suicidal ideation, homicidal ideation, and without Tinley, I think that they would have enacted on it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate all of your testimony. The state agencies, I think Director Jones would like to come back up for a few minutes to comment.
Just for a moment, members of the commission, I just wanted to clarify a point that one of the previous individuals testified to. I think it was Mr. Engelhart from South Suburban Hospital. And he testified that Chicago Reed, I thought he heard that Chicago Reed would be doing outpatient, and that's incorrect. Chicago Reed would be doing extended care, which is basically having people in the hospital for slightly longer lengths of stay. Same population that won't stabilize rapidly could go to Chicago Reed. So we have some flexibility in terms of those beds, but it's definitely not outpatient. Just wanted to clarify that point.
Okay, is there a change of the, is that the acute crisis beds, inpatient beds? Is there a change in that?
In the overall restructuring plan, the overall restructuring plan that assumed the closures of the three hospitals, Chicago Reed's mission would change from acute and extended care to primarily extended care, outpatient.
But then his concern is valid.
Well, no, because it would be, it's still inpatient care, not outpatient care. It's still inpatient care for people who need slightly longer lengths of stay, but we'd have some flexibility with that.
Okay. While you're up there, can you tell us who the five hospitals that you have been in?
I don't wish to disclose the names of those hospitals. I think that they can self-disclose out of fairness to them.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Director. We appreciate that. Okay. Moving on to agenda number 8. Community organizations and other interested parties, if you'd like to come up. Reverend Tyrone Kreider from the Mount Calvary Baptist Church, Bishop G.H. Bruton from Ministers Conference of South Cook County, Pastor Ryan Hart, Ministries Conference of South Cook County, Pastor Samuel DeBose, St. Andrew Temple Church of God in Christ, and Pastor Dale Lawson, Sr., Christ Temple Baptist Church. I think there might be one more, Pastor Frederick L. Jackson, if he's still here. Thank you very much for coming today. Whoever would like to start, just state your name. Please proceed.
Good evening. I'm Pastor Frederick Jackson, associate pastor from New Beginnings Church on the south side of Chicago. My testimony is one Thursday night last year, a young man came into the church. We were having Bible study, and he began to shout out vulgar things towards our ladies. And basically, he was saying he wanted money, clothes, and that farm use tool and guns. We told everyone in the church to leave out except for the men. And so we retained the man and found out that this man was not on his medication. And his grandmother said that she was only able to give him half a dose of his medicine. Now, if Tinley Park closes, this man would be a loose cannon. Now, with half a dose of his medicine, he act like that and went off into the church saying vulgar things. What would he be like if he didn't have his full dose of medicine? And so I want to encourage you all to do the right thing, because we have hope and trust and faith in this panel that you all will help us out and meet the needs of this community on the south side of Chicago. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
I am Dale Lawson, Sr., Reverend Dale Lawson, Sr., pastor of Christ Temple Baptist Church in Markham, Illinois. I come today to before this panel and the commission and other interested persons to express my opposition to the closing of Tinley Park Mental Health Center. The closing of this facility will have a catastrophic impact on the South Suburban area as a whole.
With Tinley Park absent, the area hospitals and extended care facilities, all of whom have downsized staff with experience and excessive emergency room overload and population explosion. The proposed closing will also overextend and overwhelm medical personnel with limited skills in the area of mental health, which means inadequate quality of care. This presents a public safety concern for our children, our seniors, and communities in the South Suburban Cook County area. For the increased homelessness, as been mentioned earlier, crime, sexual assault, as well as the population of our jails and prison system. Even the safety of our children going to and from school, our seniors going to and from their activities. With the announced closing of other medical facilities as well, needless to say, this is a great concern for our residential populace. Notwithstanding the distance that many of us will have to travel to visit or obtain proper care for our parents, grandparents, spouses, children, and as a pastor, our parishioners who need mental health care for their loved ones. We're talking about a human need here. The closing of Tinley Park will have an even greater impact on the metropolitan Chicagoland area for the same reasons. The closed Tinley Park mental health facility would be equal, from my perspective, as opening our levees and allowing Hurricane Katrina to displace 1,900 mental health patients. It would be the same as asking voters to support a referendum for mental health facilities when there are none. Then there's the issue of civil rights. Closing this much needed facility is unethical, inhumane, and unconscionable, and even suicidal. It is a slap in the face of us as taxpayers. The question is, will property taxes decline as a result of this place being closed? I appeal to this commission, the Department of Health Services, and whatever it takes to cancel this closing to do so. The Bible states that people without a vision will perish. Give us a vision of a healthier community. Jesus said, when you care for the least of these, you've done it unto me. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm Bishop G.H. Bruton from the Hy-Vee era, pastor of the Light of the World Church and president of the Ministers' Conference of South Cook County. I've come, got here before you set up. I was here to help you set up the day. So you can say the bishop is in the house. I sit patiently and heard all the testimonies. Took good notes. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to make a long speech. I have someone to speak for me, Reverend Reinhardt. But let me say this. Al Riley's gone and other representative, but I'm asking those that are here, our state, our representatives, to go back to Springfield and sit down with the governor and work on that plan. What we really have here, of all of these peoples in this auditorium, and it's almost like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. You cannot do that. We must keep this center open. This institution must stay open. These are real people. We must keep it open because as I sit here today and address you, I am 77 years old. And I can tell you, if you're not careful, you'll be trading place with one of those patients over there. So I ask you to go back to Springfield, sit down with the governor, and work on a plan, and let the record flip that I'm personally calling a meeting with Governor Twin to talk about this issue and other issues around the health problem in our area, the South Suburban Southland. We represent Cook County as well as part of Will County. Now, give it to my friend.
Thank you very much.
Good evening. I'm Father Rod Reinhardt. I'm the pastor of St. Clement's
Episcopal Church in the city of Harvey. And I'm a member of the board of the Ministers' Conference of South Cook County. And I'm also active with the National Episcopal Mental Health Network. And I've worked with people with mental illnesses for many years, and especially with veterans who have mental problems and are in and out of various hospitals and both VA hospitals as well as the regular public mental health institutions. And I want to very simply say that I need to use, as a pastor, the language of morality, righteousness, holiness, sin, things like that. And I'm going to do it because this is a problem that goes back thousands and thousands of years. If you read the Gospels, you can see over and over again that Jesus was healing people with serious mental illnesses. All of these stories of people having demons cast out basically are stories of people with serious mental problems who were being healed and cared for and raised up to some kind of equality in society by Jesus himself. And you see all across the history of the church and all across the history of the synagogues, all across the history of Islamic work, you see deeply religious people who are deeply concerned about issues of health care and especially mental health care. And religious institutions have always said it is vitally important that we, as people of faith, we as the public, care for those in greatest need. Today, we can say that the ministry and mission of the church has been taken up by the entire society. We as a society are deeply concerned about health, mental health, caring for the poor, and doing what's right. We, as the church leaders, we as community leaders, we as mental health leaders, are deeply concerned about making sure that health care, mental health care, continues to be available for those in greatest need, and especially for our veterans who are coming home with deeply serious mental health issues. As I said, the VA hospitals cannot do it all. All of us together can do some of what needs to be done. Please keep that hospital open. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Good evening. My name is Dr. Richard Bongard. I'm sorry for being late. I was at a mental health center seeing the patients that we serve. I'm a psychiatrist at Tinley Park Mental Health Center. I'm fortunate to be in this profession because there are many jobs in this area, so the closure is not going to affect me very much, except for the fact that I love the place. I like it there. I like the patients. I like the way the service is delivered. And I believe that I do more than just prescribe medications for the patients, as the staff do. The department proposes the closing of Tinley Park, saying that the private hospitals and community mental health system will do the job instead. As a psychiatrist, I've worked in the private sector, the community mental health center, the public sector, and I can tell you that is not the case. There's no alternative to Tinley Park in this area. It just is not. No matter what our administration has said, there is no planning that's really been done adequately to provide services for our patients. We had 1,905 admissions last year to Tinley Park Mental Health Center. Those patients came to us because there's nowhere else to go. The private hospitals won't serve them for two simple reasons. First of all, our patients are not insured. And the private hospitals will receive no funds from the state for these patients, and the federal government does not pay for these patients to the hospitals for treating these patients. Second, we serve some very disruptive patients, patients that the private hospitals don't want because of the liability, because they're in it for the business part of it. the bottom line, and the public health mental health system is not. We work very closely with community mental health centers, but they are not an alternative to Tinley Park. Outpatient treatment centers are part of a continuum of care, which in fact the state has cut dramatically. But they don't provide inpatient care. They provide outpatient care, support, and medications. For instance, if your doctor wrote an order for you to go to an inpatient center in the area, why would you go to a clinic? It's not appropriate treatment. It's not the same level of care. There's also another reason community mental health centers cannot fill the breach. Their funding has been cut and cut again. I myself work at Grand Prairie Services, and I've been told by their administration that they're going to cut 5 additional caseworkers by the end of November. Already, they've cut many of their staff. The services are meager, and they are in no position to expand services. They're cutting services. Beyond whether there are facilities or services to replace Tinley Park, why would you want to? Tinley Park delivers necessary services.
Close.
Tinley Park?
No.
What?
Bring your remarks to a close, not get closer to the mic.
We had a time limit. I think you weren't in the room when everybody's had a time limit of 2 minutes.
Minute.
Yeah, thank you.
They deliver cost-effective, efficient service. They also provide a somewhat longer treatment regimen, although it has been cut. However, much longer than the private hospitals, which probably their average is 5 days. We can help them with their treatment plans, their discharge planning, and this is necessary to prevent them from coming back again and to help them in recovery. I thank you for your time, and I would ask you to reconsider closing Tinley Park Mental Health Center. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate all of your testimony. Thank you. We had a few on the last number on the agenda, which is number 9, general public comments. If you would like to come up, it's Shastri Swaminathan, Dr. William Sullivan, Dr. Victoria Loser, looks like, education specialist, special ed. Eileen McGrath, Martin McDermott, and Judith Jensen. I think we can all fit. Oh, and one more. Ballard Powell from the Illinois Department of Corrections. Can we all fit? If you'd like to give your name, please proceed. Thank you.
My name is Eileen McGrath, and I'm a registered nurse for 60 years. And I'm a resident of Tinley Park, and I represent no other group but myself. I am against the closing of Tinley Park Mental Health Center. Of course, we've talked about when it was first proposed that another one would be available. As everyone should know, that mental illness has a biological base and it has a chemical imbalance. Much progress has been made with effective psychotropic drugs, and many people are able to be cared for without hospitalization. But for some people, they are resistant to these medication and do need the care in a facility like Tinley Park Mental Health Center. If the hospital closes, as was mentioned often, the people will be on the street or in nursing homes without proper psychiatric care or in jail. I was employed as a school nurse for the Chicago Public School System in the jail. And not only will the people have the stigma, which is still there for mental illness, they'll also have the stigma of having been arrested and in jail. And that will cost the state more because you have court costs and all other kinds of costs involved. So I do think that you should keep the Tinley Park Mental Health Center open.
Thank you very much.
My name is Victoria Lozer. I've been working with mentally ill patients for 40 years. And I believe this proposal to close Tinley Park Mental Health Center is a slap in the face to those who are least able to care or fight for themselves. Just like the elderly, little kids, veterans, and an increasing number of poor in our communities, we don't have money for campaign contributions to fight for this. Thinking is that more people will be absorbed into the community or homes. Well, just imagine if you were a psychotic person and your parents were trying to care for you and your behavior is extremely erratic. These families can't take care of these people who need long-term institutionalization. When a pointless tragic crime occurs and everybody says, "Well, why didn't anyone do anything?" Well, friends and coworkers and acquaintances, they know that something's wrong, but there's no help. There's nothing until the person commits a crime, they're thrown in jail, and they leave behind a trail of devastated families. Mental illness is the most discriminated against disease ever. It's a brain disorder. It's a brain disorder that can be treated. And especially substance abuse, that is a chemical brain disorder, and people self-medicate because they cannot get help. I saw Mantino Mental Health Center State Hospital closed in the 70s, and people were literally given a few dollars, put on a bus to Chicago, and these were some people who had been hospitalized, institutionalized for decades. And now the buildings in Mantino at the hospital, some of them have been sold, some of them are used, some are just dilapidated and falling down. I certainly don't want to see this happen here, and I don't think we need another strip mall and another subdivision. I think that some... Thank you. I'm sorry, I'm almost done. My childhood home in Park Forest is being rehabbed by Habitat for Humanity combined with students, and they're learning skills. Why can't we look for something like that to rehab these buildings and teach these young people some skills? Just shutting this place down, they're all going to go on the street. They're all going to go into jail, which you're going to have to spend more money on, or else they'll just die. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Good evening. Thank you. I'm Dr. Swaminathan. I'm currently the chair of the Department of Psychiatry at Advocate and Law Masonic Hospital. But prior to this, I've done many things in Illinois. I'm the past president of the Illinois Psychiatric Society and the past president of the Illinois State Medical Society, where we deal with this problem of mental health through our different committees, Council on Medical Services, Mental Health and Addictions. I've always also been in private practice, and I've worked in different capacities for about 36 years in the state of Illinois. I come from a long way. I come about 30 miles away, and you wonder why. What am I doing here in the southland of Chicago? I'm here because what's happening here has already affected the place where I practice. We see patients that travel great distances who've been in emergency rooms at South Suburban, at Trinity, at Ingalls, and Jackson Park, and other places, finding their way to Illinois Masonic. Our emergency rooms are overcrowded. in an average day, I go down to make rounds. I will see 4 to 6 patients and figure out what to do with them. This is when we already have capacity at Tinley and at Madden and at Chicago Reed. I'm here specifically to ask you to read the paper that's in your hands from the Illinois Hospital Association, and I think it's a wonderful attempt, not just dealing with the Tinley Park closing, but the whole issue of what do we do with our fragmented healthcare system? How do we address the issue of planning such movements? And I'm very fortunate to be a member of a state where people like you are at the head of the table. I really mean that, because you asked some very important questions. The question you asked was, if we could get appropriations for private hospitals, would they be able to serve the capacity? And the answer is no. One, we don't have the capacity. And two, I think, and I think Dr. Barngard, my colleague, said there are certain sets of patients that are simply not served in those primary private hospital settings, that we need the safety net. The second question, if we could fund the community hospital, community behavioral health programs, would we be able to close Tinley Park? And the answer is no, because despite the finest services available, and I think it would help. I think it would help a great deal for better care and less fragmented care to have more funding for community health centers. But at the best of circumstances, you are going to have people, because that's the nature of the illness, the lack of ability to comprehend their illness, the lack of compliance, the need for court-mandated procedures. It's critical. We are far, far away from a situation where we can handle that in the community level. And I implore you, long before the ACA comes through, the Affordable Care Act, we desperately need, even at the current state, to keep Tinley open, because the impact of Tinley closing is going to have such far-reaching consequences, not just in the south of Chicago, but all over Illinois. So I would urge you to strongly consider to keep this facility alive and open till years come by and we can have a better system. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doctor. We appreciate your coming for your testimony.
Hi, my name is Martin McDermott, and I just have a few comments on the system, the state mental institution. We all know what the three largest mental institutions in the country are. The New York City Jail, the L.A. Jail, and the Cook County Jail. We have 9,000 residents or jailees, and 20% are considered with mental problems. So that's roughly about 2,000 people in jail not being treated behind closed door. And I've been full circle. And jail is not a hospital. And you never feel the pain when you need medicine and they say they don't have any nurses on staff. And they have 2,000 in Cook County Jail, and you want to shut down this beautiful facility that's been there for, there when I needed it 30 years ago. It's best, I got good treatment there as I did any hospital. And as long as there's two people on the face of the earth, there's going to be a difference of opinion. So I'm not an economist. I never studied much of economy. I don't know economic theory. But I know what it's like when they tell you, we don't have any medicine for you, and this is not a hospital. This is a jail, and you're behind closed doors. You don't have a lot to say, even if you're a little nuts, you know. The cops don't care, because they got their bulletproof vests on, their billy clubs, and their threats, and their pepper mace, and all that good shit. And then he made a comment about our veterans are coming home at the end of December. And this is what our trustees think, that are veterans. At a Midlothian board meeting, Trustee Moe referred to veterans as nothing but panhandlers. At a subsequent meeting, the veterans asked for an apology, which he refused to give. The mayor and the trustees were silent on this insult, which speaks volumes. Now, if they don't care about our veterans, do you think the mental health institution cares about the veterans who need a bed to lay their head when they come home from war? I can't answer that question, but I've been full circle. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Just a comment on that. And we have worked on helping with our veterans coming home in Illinois, and we have the hotline that ties them into free service with people. I think it's 24/7.
Free. Okay. I'm sure they could use it.
Yes, absolutely.
My name is Dr. William Sullivan. I am an emergency physician. I'm a past president of the Illinois College of Emergency Physicians. I'm here on both the ICEF's behalf and on my behalf as well. The Illinois College of Emergency Physicians is concerned. Statistics from the Illinois Hospital Association show that the number of inpatient psychiatric hospitalizations increased almost 10% in the past 7 years, that at the same time the psychiatric bed capacity has decreased by 28%. In 2009, Illinois emergency departments evaluated 750,000 patients with mental illness or substance abuse disorders. Of those, 190,000 had primary psychiatric health disorders. This issue about closing Tinley Park isn't just about Tinley Park. By closing these 9 state-funded facilities, the number of publicly funded psychiatric beds will decrease from 1,400 down to 200. So you're taking away health care. You're basically, the practical effect is that the closures will deny the necessary care to a large proportion of mentally ill and developmentally disabled people in this state. And the Illinois College of Emergency Physicians is concerned because the state hasn't maintained the proper community medical resources to treat these people. Speaking for myself now, I'm concerned. I think that the state somehow thinks that cutting patient beds and cutting hospitals and closing hospitals will make the problem go away. It's not going to make the problem go away. It's only going to make the problem more difficult. It's going to make it more difficult for the patients to get the proper health care they need. If you close hospitals, they're not going to have the resources to find those. Let me tell you what happens when a patient comes in the emergency department. We heard testimony before that a patient waited 5 hours in the emergency department to get care. That's good. Most patients in my emergency department, if they need mental health care, average a day or two in the emergency department. I was at a meeting today where one of the doctors said 4 out of his 16 beds were holding patients who couldn't find emergency health care. If you think 2 patients every hour in every bed, that's 24 patients who are having strokes or having heart attacks or having trouble breathing or who are in pain, didn't have access to those beds because there were patients that couldn't find health care that were taking those beds up. So denying psychiatric patients the proper inpatient care not only takes away from them, it takes away from other patients in the emergency department. It also takes away from the availability of law enforcement. If a psychiatric patient has an acute breakdown, law enforcement has to respond to that. They have to bring the patient to the emergency department, and then they have to sit there with them so the patients don't attack the staff. It also takes away from abandoning the patients with medical illness, mental illness, also takes away from EMS, because EMS has to transport patients to and from the hospital when they have a breakdown, and they also have to participate in inter-hospital transports, which sometimes can take those ambulances out of service for several hours. Finally, cost savings, I think, are imagined in this case. We think that we're going to save costs by decreasing the amount of beds available, but you're going to end up increasing costs because those patients are going to have to get admitted to the hospital, and they're going to sit in the hospital for several days while they wait to try to find care. So cutting mental health funding and closing these hospitals, it hamstrings the ability of the emergency physicians to provide care. It makes bad economic sense, it makes bad medical sense, and it makes bad moral sense. So please don't do it.
Thank you very much. Our final panelist. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Judith Jensen. I'm a retired psychologist who is a resident of Tinley Park. I have worked in the mental health, community mental health, and in the schools. I want, as a citizen who has some experience in this area, to oppose any decision which would deny public services to persons with acute mental illness who are, in my experience, acutely needy and vulnerable. And I have a brief example. A number of years ago, I was living and working on the north side of Chicago and walking down the street when a young woman came up to me and told me she wanted to go home with me. We talked some more. I asked her who she was. She said she didn't know. She thought she was maybe God. We talked some more. She said her mother had recently died. She was making gestures to passing cars, which suggested to me perhaps she had been surviving by prostitution. I persuaded her to consider Reed Mental Health Center, where she had been before. We walked to an ice cream store where I used the phone to call the police to take her to Reed. As she entered the human services van, she turned to me and said, "Mama." This woman had no insurance, no family to speak for her. She's an example of people who need care for acute mental illness. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Are there any questions? Yes, Representative McCarthy.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say, Dr. Sullivan, this is something that's come up at hearings at this time before, and I know you didn't mean it this way, but I want to tell you what I heard. You kind of referenced that people came in with strokes or difficulty breathing, and people with mental illness were taking those emergency beds, so that room wasn't available for them. And that could almost be looked at thinking like, well, that isn't a real illness or something. And that's something that we've tried to get over in this state for a long time. So I know you didn't mean it that way, but it did come across that way after I heard it from being in many hearings, you know, such as this. So, I mean, I know you, I take it for granted, you can't feel that way, but I would, you know, just ask you to make it a little bit clearer in the beginning. Dr. Nathan, I was going to ask you mentioned about these other hospitals, how it came up. Was it Illinois Masonic? Is that?
Yes.
I have a hard time understanding. That's like on Wellington, like 3000 North,
yes,
or something?
Yes, sir.
Now, what do you have any suggestion what we can do to make these other hospitals be more responsive as far as having psychiatric beds? We had two up here today, and one had zero, and one had 48, which was kind of surprising, but I don't think they ever had 48 actually in the place at one time. But that would be the question.
Sure. But before I do that, let me quickly respond to the one that you talked about, Dr. Sullivan. I think the implication, I see this every morning, the implication here is that there are patients that are in need of psychiatric services who have been triaged, examined, evaluated, who are waiting to go to Tinley or Madden or Reed. And because there's a backlog, because there is no hospital bed available, and closing Tinley would make that even worse, that person sits there in the ED not getting psychiatric services. Meanwhile, a stroke patient walks in who needs care, and the physicians and nurses are diverted. They could provide care to the other person, but they have to provide services to the person existing. If this person could be quickly taken away to a place where he should be getting care, or she should be getting care, we could free up the services for the stroke patient, for the cardiac patient. I think that was the implication.
The services for both.
Absolutely. But I think the fact that there's a backlog and this person is not getting any services, meanwhile waiting to be taken someplace and diverting the attention of other important critical services, that was the intention.
All right. Please address the other question.
The other question in terms of capacity, we don't. Right now, we used to have CHIPS funds last year, which expired. And we've talked about appropriations that would temporarily, our length of stays are very, very brief. There are certain kinds of patients we could take care of, and we have. As a matter of fact, in the last 2 years, we have had an average of 2 to 3 patients in our floor every single day that have no funding whatsoever, that either the state doesn't have the capacity to take them or they waited too long in the ED, and I, as a chairman, say this is criminal. We can't have a patient sit there for 48, 72 hours. Send the patient up. We'll take care of him right now. We can't keep that up forever. My concern, of course, is that unlike, and if I may indulge a minute here, psychiatric beds and psychiatric services do not provide a large profit margin for hospitals, like orthopedics and eye surgery and abdominal surgery and so on. And so if you start to fill up those beds with patients without any reimbursement for the hospital, and the census goes up to maybe 10%, 15%, the hospital shut us down. And then you have a real crisis of not even having psychiatric beds available to you. We used to have CHIPS funds expired last year. We have no appropriation at this point. So whatever patients we do take, and we take them all the time, we take them because we believe in charity, we believe that that person needs that care. But there's only so much limit we can have that kind of patient there. Okay. So I think at some part we do need that safety backup state hospital to provide services for those patients.
Okay. Well, I do appreciate that. And the panel before you, Dr. Bongard, I don't want to be calling people out, but he did ask the question, why do we want to do this? And I just want to make it clear, and I don't speak for all my colleagues up there, but I know their feelings. Nobody wants to do this. You know, the secretary of the department doesn't want to do this. Director Jones doesn't want to do this. But a lot of the community people that are out here taking on a lot of the responsibility as these people proceed from a state hospital or another hospital out into the community basis. Some of those same community organizations are people calling me because they have mortgaged their building. You know, they are so far behind in the pay. We have to be responsible about that, too. And it's been more the House that stopped some of these appropriations. But we have to get to the point where we stop promising people we're going to get them a certain amount of dollars and then not do it and put them in harm's way as far as even making their payroll. And there's not too many people out there today that can afford to go months without a payroll in order to, you know, meet the obligation they have to their own family. So, you know, I mean, I know he didn't probably mean that exactly as that what do we want to do this, but none of us want to do this, but we have to be responsible with the amount of money we have. And I'm real proud of the General Assembly this year that we have looked at our revenues and we have tried to determine where they're going to be at the end of the year, and we haven't overpromised, because overpromising causes so many more problems than you understand. But I hope everyone understands that no matter where you stand in this, I mean, Senator Crotty and I are the legislators who represent Tinley Park Mental Health Center. We represent right here where we're sitting right now. And we really respect the work that's been doing there. I know that Maggie's been one of the more involved legislators on mental health issues. And we served on, you know, committee when I asked one of my earlier questions about the correlation between the centers and the community bases. We went all across the state to find out where that was. And Singer Hospital at that point was one of the best. And Tinley had some problems, but they did a lot of improvement, which I wanted to point out earlier. But okay. I hope people understand when we look at this, we have to be responsible in pretending that we have that money there when we don't have that. Is actually a worse solution in the long run. So we'll go back there and we'll try to work toward this appropriation. And hopefully we can find the resources to do it, because I think we do have a facility here that is providing a lot of help to our area. So.
You have a very difficult job. I would thank you for, and I just want to mention Dr. Bongard is a well-meaning doctor. I know him since his residency days. I think he's very frustrated. He could have chosen to be in any other place. I think he's in Tinley Park because he cares. And that's not an easy doctor to find these days. Too.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. I'd like to, I think there are no more questions of this panel. Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate each and every one of you. I'd like to make sure that I'm not sure how many people that were here today, CAGFA members, received the letter that was mentioned from the Illinois Hospital Association, dated October 24th. I'd like to ask CAGFA if they would make sure to get that letter to all the members of CAGFA besides just the chairs, and I'm not sure if they did or not, but the other elected officials that were here today also. Is it there?
I have no idea.
I'm never sure if the letter is directed just to Jeff and I, if the other members get that. I think that's an important letter. Also, the letter from the Mental Health Summit, dated October 21st, 2011, I would appreciate if that letter would go to the other members also, and the members that were here today from this area. Okay, thank you. Then moving on to old business. I don't think there's any old business. The new business would be probably tentatively scheduled during veto session on November 10th. We will probably take a vote on the closures of Jacksonville Developmental Center, Logan Correctional Center, and Tinley Park facility. That's just tentative. We just brought that up now. We'd like to try to make that. It has to be within a certain time frame, and that would be when most of the members would all be back in Springfield during veto session. It will be on the website, on the CAGFA website. So again, as we close, this has been quite an adventure going all over the state with all the hearings that we've had. I want to thank, on behalf of Senator Schoenberg and I, all of the government officials that have testified. I want to thank, especially again, what I mentioned before, the executive branch officials who have been at every one of these hearings and their staff who have been so wonderful in all their testimony. We appreciate all the time and effort. I want to thank the CAGFA staff, Director Long and Trevor, and everybody with the CAGFA staff, including Donna back at the Capitol, who have done so much work and have organized these things so quickly. And in lots of cases, we were in gymnasiums with over 1,000 or 1,200 people. So it's been quite something to take on, and we appreciate all them. I appreciate all the members of CAGFA who have driven all over the state within the last month, and all the elected officials, from the towns and the cities where the meetings were located in attending them, and all the other elected officials who have come to the meetings in areas where they represented them. But most of all, I want to thank all of you, the people who are here tonight and throughout the state of Illinois, who care so much about these facilities. And we understand that, and we are working towards working out solutions to the problems that these closures, if any of them take place. We want to work with the people of the communities and some, whatever may happen in the end. But we thank all of you for your participation. And we have tried, as I said before, in our last hearing, we went 5.5 hours. We had 89 people testify, and we waited to hear every single one of them, as we did today. So thank you again. We appreciate it. The meeting is adjourned.